entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Very close in New York, I understand, and we're leading in the country by a lot. Poll just came out a little while ago, as you saw yesterday, that we're up in every swing state and up by a lot in every swing state. So I think we're going to do very well, and we're going to make a play for New York. I just heard there was a very good poll came out. Normally, a Democrat will win New York. Biden is the worst president in history, and we have some very bad people here, but we have the greatest people, and they're right behind me. And they all want us to run, and we're gonna run very hard in New York. New York, we have a good chance of winning New York, in my opinion, but we're going to give it a shot.
The Supreme Court and the unprecedented case of presidential immunity before the justices. At issue is whether former President Donald Trump is immune from criminal prosecution for what he claims were official acts while in office. The decision will have major implications on the special counsel's election interference case against Trump, as well as this year's presidential race. Trump wasn't at oral arguments at the Supreme Court. He was in a courtroom in Lower Manhattan, where he is mandated to appear for his trial for falsifying business records to hide an alleged affair. In addition, Trump is facing criminal trials in Georgia and Florida, and Trump was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in Arizona and Michigan over fake elector schemes.
In nearly 3 hours of historic arguments, the justices emphasized their decision will go beyond former President Donald Trump.
Whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents.
No president has ever faced criminal prosecution, and some justices, while emphasizing a president is not above the law, focused on what precedent the case will set.
History tells us it's not going to stop. It's going to cycle back and be used against the current president or the next president and the next president after that.
I am concerned about future uses of the criminal law to target political opponents.
Trump is arguing he has absolute immunity as president from prosecution for official acts during his tenure in office, including efforts to overturn the 2020 election. He made the point again before entering a New York courtroom on trial today in one of 4 criminal cases against him.
The president has to have immunity. This has nothing to do with me.
But that sweeping argument of absolute immunity is one the justices, liberal and conservative, seemed almost certain to reject.
If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office?
The framers did not put an immunity clause into the Constitution. Wasn't the whole point that the president was not a monarch, and the president was not supposed to be above the law?
Instead, the justices appear to be focused on a middle ground where presidents may have some immunity from prosecution for official acts, as Justice Clarence Thomas asked at the very beginning of the argument.
How exactly would we determine what an official act is?
That question may take time. The court has never decided it, but the clock is ticking if Special Counsel Jack Smith can prosecute Trump before the election.
If the justices rule that he has some limited immunity, how long could this take? What's the timeline?
I wouldn't expect a decision before June. I mean, this is a complicated case. The justices know it's going to be the law long after they have left the Supreme Court. But that's what Special Counsel Jack Smith asked for. The court agreed to expedite this case so they could have a decision by the end of the term. Now, whether or not there's a decision in time for a trial before the election, that'll be determined by how the court writes it and whether or not there are issues for the lower courts to resolve.
The U.S. Supreme Court had a monumental hearing on immunity and the immunity having to do with presidential immunity. And I think it was made clear, I hope it was made clear, that a president has to have immunity. You don't have a president, or at most you can say it would be a ceremonial president. That's not what the founders had in mind. They're not talking about ceremonial. We want presidents that can get things done and bring people together. So I heard the meeting was quite amazing. And the justices were on their game. So let's see how that all turns out. But again, I say presidential immunity, very powerful. Presidential immunity is imperative, or you practically won't have a country anymore.
Well, now to those growing pro-Palestinian demonstrations embroiling college campuses. We've seen tensions rise at more than a dozen schools from coast to coast. Since last week, hundreds of campus protesters have been arrested. One major university canceling its graduation.
Campus crackdown at Atlanta's Emory University. Police tore down tents erected this morning, and some appear to be tased by police. Some students and faculty were led away in handcuffs. At the University of Texas, Austin, dueling protests. Pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli protesters facing off on campus with security watching. On the campus of USC, the LAPD used their batons to disperse a large crowd of protesters late last night. The school canceling the main stage commencement ceremony. CBS's Nancy Chen is at Columbia University.
Dozens of tents remain here at Columbia University as we near a midnight deadline. School administrators have set to clear this lawn. Right outside it, Israeli flags. And some Jewish students we spoke to say they feel scared to be on campus.
Many of us knew people or the music festival or that lived nearby. I'm sorry, I'm getting very emotional about that. And adding to that, the situation where people scream hateful speech, who have harassed and attacked both verbally and physically people, is just making it impossible to be here.
Very importantly, as you look at the various colleges all over the country and beyond colleges, because it's happening in other areas too, you see what's happening on the front having to do with Palestine and Israel and protests and hate, anger. Biden is sending an absolutely horrible message. Horrible, horrible message. He has no idea how to message. He can't speak. He can't put two sentences together. He doesn't know what to do. This is not our president. This is somebody that shouldn't be doing what he's doing because he can't do it. He can't do it well. We're having protests all over. He was talking about Charlottesville. Charlottesville was a little peanut, and it was nothing compared, and the hate wasn't the kind of hate that you have here. This is tremendous hate, and we have a man that can't talk about it because he doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand what's going on with our country. He doesn't understand that all over the world we're being laughed at as a country because of him and his administration.
You look at these universities. When we have students who are doing things that, I mean, look, some of the stuff with the Hamas, I think is absurd that someone would go out and demonstrate on that. But, you know, when you're chasing Jewish students around, when you're not letting a Jewish professor enter a building, when you're targeting people like that, that's not free speech. I mean, that's harassment. That violates appropriate conduct. And yet, at Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost. They do whatever they want. And these administrators and the presidents of these universities are weak, they're scared, and they don't do anything. You know, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled.
A stunning blow to the case that sparked the Me Too movement. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein had his felony sex crime convictions overturned by New York's highest court.
Disgraced former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein remains behind bars after a New York appeals court ruled he did not receive a fair trial. Weinstein's attorney, Arthur Idala.
This was a case about perversion. Well, in that courthouse, the trial, the laws were perverted because there was so much pressure, because Harvey was the face of this movement, that he had to be convicted.
The court found that in 2020, the judge, quote, erroneously admitted testimony by allowing women who were not part of the case to testify that Weinstein had assaulted them. The decision comes more than 4 years after the 72-year-old was found guilty and sentenced to 23 years in prison for sexually assaulting two women.
The New York District Attorney plans to retry the case, but keep in mind Harvey Weinstein faces a 16-year sentence in California for sexual assault. His attorneys say they want to look at that case too.
With the 11th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the New York Jets select Olu Fashanu, tackle, Penn State.
And those Jet fans should be happier than they look. He's 6'6", 312 pounds, a consensus All-American in the Big Ten's offensive lineman of the year in 2023.
With the 6th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Malik Nabers, wide receiver, LSU.
So they do go wide receiver from LSU, just like back in the day, Odell. And it is Malik Nabers coming to the Giants' fold.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one old song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing there to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. Here I am on the road again. Here I am on the stage. Here I go playing star again. Here I go, turn the page.
Here I go, turn the page. A little Bob Seger for you. 6:14 on your Shabbat Friday morning here in New York City. Bob Seger, of course, hails from Detroit, Michigan. And the very end of that open, you heard the two first-round picks for the local football teams last night, the Jets and the Giants. And that draft took place in Detroit, Michigan. Hence, Bob Seger to start the show today. Brilliant move. Out of Ruffino, turn the page. Give me some more of this, Louis. Come on, baby. Friday morning, let go.
Most times you can't hear him talk. Other times you can. All the same old cliches. Is it woman? Is it man? And you always seem outnumbered, so you don't dare make a stand.
So the Jets, they don't go tight end. They don't take Bowers. The Jets go offensive line to protect Aaron Rodgers. And the football Giants, they go wide receiver. This kid Nabers, Malik Nabers, 2023, was the best receiver in the country. I know Marvin Harrison Jr., his father, the Hall of Famer, was the best receiver, but I'm talking about numbers. Harrison did go number four to Arizona, giving a big weapon to a very high-paid quarterback out there, Kyler Murray. So the Giants, the last time they picked a wide receiver out of LSU in the first round, no, any idea who that may have been?
I don't know.
You really don't know?
No.
Wow, he great receiver for the Giants, made some of the greatest circus catches ever. But the Giants got a little tired of his off-the-field nonsense, even his on-the-field stuff, the celebrating in the end zone, like peeing like a dog.
No, come on.
Come on,
why
brother.
I know who you're talking about, but the name is
Odell
just
Beckham Jr.
Thank you.
Yeah. So they go LSU wide receiver.
He got kicked
against
out everywhere he went after that, too.
Oh, he's been everywhere.
Yeah, Cleveland.
Won a Super Bowl with the Rams.
No, that's true.
He went to Cleveland. But clearly the Giants are sticking with Daniel Jones because they did not trade up. They did not get Drake May, the quarterback out of North Carolina. He went three to New England. So it looks like Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones, will be the quarterback. They just give him another weapon here with Nabers out of LSU. But we'll see. There were six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. Six in the first 12. USC quarterback Caleb Williams went number one to the Bears. LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels went number two to the Washington Commanders. North Carolina quarterback Drake May went number three to New England. He replaces Mac Jones. Mac Jones is now the backup for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. Here's one that surprised everybody, though, with the eighth pick overall. The fourth quarterback selected in the first round, Michael Penix Jr., great quarterback from Washington, but he went to the Falcons. And the Falcons, just a couple of weeks ago, gave former Minnesota Viking quarterback Kirk Cousins a boatload of money and a long-term deal. So that was an odd selection. Penix going to Atlanta. At number 10, the Vikings made a trade, and they selected Michigan quarterback. He just won the national championship, J.J. McCarthy. And then at number 12, the Denver Broncos, who a few days ago acquired former Jet quarterback Zach Wilson, they drafted Oregon quarterback Bo Nix. So there you have it, bud. Six quarterbacks in 12 picks, but Penix at number 8 going to the Falcons. Weird, because again, they just gave Kirk Cousins a long-term deal and a lot of money.
Surprising. Wow.
Weird, yeah. By the way, the dirtiest player I've seen in years, I mean years, dating back to the days when Dennis Rodman would kick cameramen in the face, or Charles Oakley would beat up people on the court. This Joel Embiid, I know he's great, 50 points last night, 50. He's a reigning MVP. He's a great, great player. And I believe the Knickerbockers are in big trouble. They lost that game last night in Philly, 125-114. That series now has the Knicks up 2-1. But the truth is, the Knicks were behind double digits in both games at the Garden, and they needed a miracle to pull out game two. And the Sixers go home last night and beat them up. But this Embiid, I mean, at one point, he literally grabbed Hartenstein by his feet and his ankles and dragged him down. He clearly knocked down Mitchell Robinson. He's like the dirtiest player ever. I don't care if he's got Bell's palsy. He's a dirty scumbag.
And I didn't know that he had that.
Well, no one knew. He announced it after the game last night.
Oh, okay.
He broke it to the public after the game as if that makes him a sympathetic figure.
Well, that's why
he's a dirty scumbag.
That's exactly why he probably.
Oh, my God. I hate his guts.
Hey, give me a break. I got Bell's palsy, so I'm going to be doing these
please.
Dirty things.
Please.
Right. Oh, wow.
That series, I'm telling you, that is not. That's going to be rough.
It is.
That's going to be rough.
It is. Well, yeah. What's Tom Wilson going to come out with from the Capitals?
Yeah.
Hey, I've got brain hemorrhage. makes me elbow guys in the face. Well,
Tom Wilson is back on the ice tonight. Funny you mention him. The Rangers resumed their series up 2-0 in Washington against Tom Wilson. And the Capitals and the Islanders are now just a pubic hair away from playing golf with Joseph Abu this summer. Down 3-0 to Carolina.
Use the 5-wood on this, I think.
So a lot of sports. We'll do some sports today, but I guess we'll get to the meat stories. There's so much going on. I mean, you got Donald Trump back in court today, day 8 of this ridiculous hush money trial. I know David Pecker will be back on the stand again. He's been on the stand just about every day this week. And yesterday he talked about buying stories about Tiger Woods, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, what is that all about, Noam Layton?
You know, I wish there were cameras in the courtroom for a bunch of reasons, but definitely for Pecker's testimony, because we're only hearing it secondhand. But he talked about the fact that when Arnold Schwarzenegger announced that he was going to run for governor, that about 30 women came forward to his magazine, the National Enquirer, at the time, claiming of having affairs with Schwarzenegger, and that he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying up stories for Schwarzenegger so they would never appear. Same holds true for Tiger Woods. The National Enquirer at one point had gotten a picture of Woods with some woman that wasn't his wife. And they said they wouldn't publish the story unless if Tiger Woods agreed to appear on the cover of one of his magazines. And they did. He was on the cover of Men's Fitness. So this is sort of he's laying out these details because essentially that's what the former president did leading up to the 2016 election was he's alleged to have bought these stories of people who were claiming these awful things that he didn't want to come out. And Pecker saying, hey, this is routine for us or was routine for us at the National Enquirer.
Gotcha. Okay. So day 8 today, this ridiculous trial continues, and Trump, who's freezing, he makes that comment every day. I feel bad for my friend Trump, freezing in the courtroom. He, there was another big deal for Trump yesterday in D.C., where the 9 Supreme Court justices, oral arguments, talking about the president's immunity, not just for Trump, but every president moving forward. It's a big deal. No decision yet. expect a decision sometime in June, but it looks like that they're going to come to some type of agreement that the president does deserve some immunity, not the absolute immunity I think that Trump wants. I think there'll be a compromise here. Is that what you basically took from yesterday, Noam?
Yeah, if you listen to the questioning, you got the sense that they were leaning in the former president's favor, that these trials that the prosecutors want to get in before the election likely will not happen before the election because they'll be pushed off by all of this, that whether he has immunity or not.
All right. So the other big story, of course, continues here in New York, but all across the country are these scumbags, these pro-Palestinians. I hate these kids. In fact, I got to warn Judge Napolitano before he even comes on. In fact, I warn him on the air. We'll do this on the air. I don't want to hear anybody tell me that these kids have the right. I know they've got the right. I know the law. Nobody is more appreciative of the First Amendment than me. Nobody. There's not a person on radio in the world today that takes it to the line like I do. You don't need to explain to me about the First Amendment. But. When you start talking about death to Israel, death to America, and getting physically violent, and stop blaming it on the cops and other protesters, to me, you've lost the right. That's not a peaceful protest. Like AOC said, that dumb twat. So they're out there again causing all kinds of trouble, violence, and I love what they did at Harvard. At Harvard, these idiots are on the lawn, so they put the sprinklers on. How great was that, Noam?
Yeah, it was hysterical.
Fantastic. They had to cancel a graduation. I guess Emory in Georgia, very good school. My nephew Evan graduated there. They had to cancel a show at some other university. They are yelling and screaming more and more, death to America. So I know that people like Frank Morano and Judge Napolitano, hey, they can do it. I'd be out there right with them. That's our First Amendment right. Then you go out there. You look like a scumbag like the rest of them. Me? No. Me, I'd like to see us amend that some way. Like I always say, if you could add a wild card team in baseball and buck tradition, there's got to be a way to figure this thing out, too. Because this is not healthy. This is not good. These, for the most part, are not peaceful protests. These folks are sitting out there representing murder. They have no idea where Palestine is. It doesn't even exist. It doesn't even exist. And again, at the risk of repeating myself, when you talk to people who know history, they have a very hard time talking about innocent Palestinians. 90% of the Palestinians vote with Hamas. 90%. They dance and celebrate in the street every time there's an attack on Israelis, like it's their own wedding night. So stop with the innocence. This all needs to stop. I thought Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, did the best job I've heard since this whole thing started yesterday. He said, in Florida, we're not going to take this. We're just going to kick you out. That's it. Let's play this one more time. It was in the open. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on how they handle it down in Florida compared to the feckless leadership like Hochul and Adams we've got here in New York. Cut 11.
You think about what happened when you have these Hamas demonstrators out. They're taking over bridges and they're taking over roads. And first of all, you don't have a right to do that. You have someone get stuck in traffic. How do you know if someone may need to get to a hospital? Someone may need to pick up a child somewhere, and you're just going to commandeer the road because you have this ideological prediction? They tried to do that in Miami, and what happened? In 10 minutes, they got dragged off the road where they belong.
Nice.
And we're not going to tolerate that. You look at...
Love it.
You look at these universities. When we have students who are doing things that, I mean, look, some of the stuff with the Hamas, I think is absurd that someone would go out and demonstrate on that. But, you know, when you're chasing Jewish students around, when you're not letting a Jewish professor enter a building, when you're targeting people like that, that's not free speech. I mean, that's harassment. That violates appropriate conduct. And yet, at Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost. They do whatever they want. And these administrators And the presidency's universities are weak, they're scared, and they don't do anything. You know, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled.
My God, I love Ron DeSantis. Thank you, Ronnie. Way to go, buddy. One more story that broke on this show yesterday. We broke it here. Arthur Idala called in here to break the story, and that is Harvey Weinstein, that creep. No one's happier for Arthur than me. Nobody. I've known Arthur for decades and decades, went to Poly Prep together. He is one of my best friends. That's not an overstatement. He is literally one of my best friends, and I love him. And he's a tremendous attorney, and he did his job, and he won. It's like Johnny Cochran. O.J. Simpson was a murderous lowlife, but Johnny Cochran did his job. Same thing with Harvey. Harvey is a piece of garbage, but Artie did his job. He's still getting raked over today. And I would say this, all these women that were so furious at Harvey Weinstein, the Me Too movement actually started with Harvey Weinstein. You know what's kind of ironic, Noam, is all those women that were so angry at Harvey, and deservedly so, and started this Me Too movement, you didn't hear from any of these women when young Israeli girls were being raped in tunnels all over Gaza.
No, that's true.
To me, I've lost a lot of the sympathy for these people. A lot of it.
Yeah, no, you haven't heard a peep, actually.
Nothing. So congratulations to Artie on getting the win. Here he was yesterday, and he'll join us live in studio this morning, coming up at 8:45. Arthur Idala outside the courthouse on the big Weinstein appeal. Victory Lewis, cut number 16.
This was a case about perversion. Well, in that courthouse, the trial, the laws were perverted because there was so much pressure, because Harvey was the face of this movement, that he had to be convicted.
There you have it, Arthur Idala. So that sets us up for a huge guest list today. I mean huge. We'll start this hour. Congressman Mike Lawler is going to stop by. Next hour, in the 7 o'clock hour, the great one. I know Mark Levin's the great one, but so is Curtis Sliwa. The great one, Curtis Sliwa, live in studio. Also in the 7 o'clock hour, Judge Napolitano, live in studio. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we've got Andrew Giuliani and Arthur Idala live in studio. And in the 9 o'clock hour, Gordon Chang and my friend, the life coach, Eileen Jimenez, live in studio. The number is always 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Some more Seeger, still the same.
Always one, every time you place the bell. You're still damn good. No one's gotten to you yet. Every time they were sure that you caught, you were quicker than they thought. You just turn your back and walk. You always said cause will never do you wrong.
In the morning.
From my friends.
77 WABC.
silence now is still the same. And the sound we make together is the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down.
.636 Friday morning. Shout out to my friend Lori, big time real estate star in New Jersey, in the car for 4 hours this morning on the way to Martha's Vineyard to celebrate her birthday. She's going to get great, eh? So happy birthday, Lori. You know, I, first of all, at the risk of sounding really obnoxious, which I am every day, I realize that. I look great today. Even Curtis was giving me the wave when he first walked in.
I think it was more than the wave.
I know. For a guy that is always very quick to point out he's not gay and all that type of thing, lately he's been very complimentary when I get dressed up because, you know, there was a time when I wore a sport jacket almost every day. Every day. And then I started to take a look at my monthly expenses, and my dry cleaning bills were outrageous. And I said, enough of this. I don't make enough money to do that. I just don't. So I kind of split the week, you know. If I've got live in studio guests, like today, Arthur Idala or the judge, I try to wear a jacket or at least a button-down shirt. There are days I wear now sweatpants and sweatshirts. And with summer coming, there are going to be some T-shirts and shorts. First of all, when I leave my house at 4 o'clock a.m. every day, there's nobody awake anyway. And by the time the, you know, the business suits show up here in the morning, I'm already gone. So I'm dressed up today and I look really good.
Yeah, it must be a special day.
It's not.
Oh, okay.
No, it's really not.
Okay.
Well, I have this event tonight, but it doesn't matter how I'm dressed this morning because I have to go back to Queens just to come back to the city if I do come back. And that is my dear friend, Chris Alenzo. Love her. And Ian. Well, I forget Ian's last name. I think it's Riley. I don't know. But they run the Metropolitan Club, the Republican Club, the Metropolitan Club. Remember last year they gave me this Brandon, I think it's Brandon. I don't even know. Warren, it's Warren. The Warren Brandeis Award for Integrity in Journalism. I won the award. It was a big night. Rudy got an award, a bunch of others. And they do this thing annually. So tonight is this year's. And the award that I won last year, Greg Kelly is getting it tonight. His father, Ray Kelly, one of the real heroes, New York history, will give him the award. Alina Haba, lovely Donald Trump attorney, she's winning some award tonight. Tom Homan, who's got all the answers on the border, he really does, he's winning something tonight. And Gordon Chang, who's going to join me this morning, coming up at 9:15.
You'll be partying with Gordon.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I may not be able to make it now, so.
Why?
It doesn't matter why.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. Don't get me wrong, Louis, but.
Just you're talking about
I may not
it.
Be able, I don't know. It's 50-50 at best.
Well, you're talking about it all week. I'm surprised that you're not going now.
He's
going
to go.
You know, I feel like when I talk about it all week, I've done what I've had to do. That's all. Time is used to
so
say,
you know. So you feel like you've been there already.
I've already been there. I've given them a whole bunch of mentions and. Which is exciting. They deserve it. It's a great Republican club. You know, for example, a few nights ago was Cindy Adams' birthday party. And I love Cindy Adams. And Cindy Adams loves me, trust me. Not as much as Chad, but she loves me. And I know how much John and Margot love Cindy. And Cindy is a riot. But she had a birthday party a couple of days ago. If they would have offered me $1 million appearance fee, I wouldn't have gone. The place was overrun with Democrats, the worst kind of Democrats, the governor, the mayor, former governor. I mean, you couldn't pay me to go there. And I love Cindy and I love John and Margo. You could not pay me. But this thing tonight, these are my people.
Yes,
these are the people that are going to save this country if we allow them to.
So odd that you're not going then.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't going.
Is there a better invite? Is that what's happening? Something else going on tonight?
Better deal. but he's setting
this. Well, yeah, the better invite is I could lay on my couch at home with one hand down my sweatpants and watch the Rangers and get some sleep.
Well, I'm sure the Rangers are glad to hear that. That'll
because
certainly help.
I have no way of getting, they're not providing me with a car. So now I got to go back to Queens and hop back on the ferry to come back in the city, then spend money on an Uber coming home. I don't want to do that. So I just don't know.
You could do half of that and still sit next to Gordon Chang at the same time.
Well, he's the one that's really getting me to think twice about coming in. Gordon Chang, he's the one. Not Alina, not Krisha. It's Gordon.
I think you got to work on that one, too. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's... could be one of the safer places you could be. Wherever Gordon Chang is, I think it would be safe.
No, I'll be, you're right, we'll be safe. Gordon has all the answers. It is interesting, we have not talked to Gordon in quite some time because we've shifted our concerns from China. I don't care about Russia, Ukraine. I just don't, sorry. To the Middle East and Israel, which I care about every second of every day. But it turns out that Blinken, this traitorous Secretary of State, he met with Xi Jinping, and they discussed, I believe, everything from even fentanyl coming across the country. I mean, you heard the stories from last week. I was watching Maria Bartiromo. I like her. She's the only show that I watch on Sundays now. Everybody else is done. Welker, NBC, yuck. Brennan, CBS, yuck. Stephanopoulos, ABC, yuck. Even Bream, who I like on Fox News, not as good as Maria. And she was talking to all these congressmen, one guy out of Michigan, about how these Chinese companies, this is unbelievable, Noam, how these Chinese companies, they're actually giving grants and huge tax benefits to companies that make fentanyl. Not the ones who make, medicine to save your life from a heart attack, No. The companies that make fentanyl are getting grants in China. You believe that?
I do, because I know also what they're doing, because they're just awful humans, is they're making deals with the Mexican cartels to then get those drugs over the border. And now you have, 100,000 Americans died last year from fentanyl poisoning? So
So we're going to talk to Chang about that. China trying to kill us every day. Every day. I do want to congratulate my dear friend Mike Sullivan, Mr. Brennan and Carr, Brooklyn Breezy Point, his brother Thomas, who's running again for assembly. Please vote for Thomas. Thomas served in Iraq. Thomas served in Afghanistan. Thomas served in Kuwait. Thomas dragged bodies, saved lives out of the burning buildings on 9/11. And his competition, Stacey Amato, she cheats and eats. That's it. Cheats and eats.
Wow.
So they're going to honor the whole Sullivan family, Brian, Danny, I guess all of them, the seven brothers, at LaSalle Military Academy tonight. They went there. So did my next door neighbor, my dear friend Joseph Iovine. So congratulations to the Sullivan brothers, all of them who graduated LaSalle Military Academy. They're going to honor those guys later on tonight. All right, right before Mike Lawler, who has been great this week. Lawler went with me Monday to Columbia. He went back, I guess, Wednesday with Mike Johnson, the speaker. We'll talk to Mike Lawler coming up momentarily. But at 6:44 on your currently sunny Friday morning.
This is Sid on Sports. Sponsored by Peerless Boilers on 77 WABC.
Justin Ellick here with your bottom of the hour sports update sponsored by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Go to peerlessboilers.com, paviliontankless.com to find a dealer near you. They're the world's best built boilers.
All right then. All right then.
Out in the Big D, baby. We were out in the Big D last night.
For the first round of the NFL draft brought us the most highly anticipated names, the 2024 class, in their new homes in the big leagues. To no one's surprise, USC quarterback Caleb Williams went first overall to the Chicago Bears before LSU QB Jaden Daniels went to Washington. UNC QB Drake May didn't go to the Giants. He went to New England. Ohio State wideout Marvin Harrison Jr. went to Arizona. And Fighting Irish offensive tackle Joe Alt went to the LA Chargers. With the sixth overall pick, your New York Giants picked up an offensive offensive weapon in LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers, while the Jets grabbed offensive tackle out of Penn State Olu Fashanu with the 11th overall pick. Nobody really knows who he is, but apparently he's very, very, very good. Rounds 2 and 3 of the draft will go down tonight, set for a 7 p.m. start time. On the hardwood in Philly, Game 3 between the Knicks and 76ers saw the Knickerbockers lose their first playoff game this postseason in the form of a 125-114 final score. A Bell's palsy-ridden Joel Embiid, complete with his bulky knee brace. He was out there looking for revenge, oftentimes a little bit dirty for the Sixers, but he did pour in 50 points, carrying the Sixers to the win. He made all four of his three-point attempts and scored 18 of his 50 in a potential series-saving third quarter for Philadelphia. The Knicks won the first two games in New York, highlighted by Dante DiVincenzo's go-ahead three-pointer with 13 seconds left in Game 2. And against the backdrop of two Villanova National Championship banners, they helped the program win. The trio form of Wildcats were largely stifled in Game 3. Jalen Brunson did lead the Knicks with 39 points and 13 assists. Really an average night for him at this point. Josh Hart scored 20 points, but DiVincenzo, off night for him, only had 5 points. Game 4 set for Sunday afternoon in Philadelphia. To baseball in the Bronx last night, the Yankees fell 3-1 to Oakland and split their four-game set with the lowly A's. Might as well have lost the series, honestly. You can't split with the A's. That's ridiculous. They'll open a three-game weekend set against the Brewers. First pitch for the opener set for 8:10. Luis Gil is scheduled to make the start for New York. In Metsland, the Orange and Blue open up their weekend set at home against the St. Louis Cardinals after being off yesterday. First pitch there scheduled for 7:10. Jose Budo primed to take the bump for the Mets. And on the ice in the NHL, the Islanders are all but dead now after a 3-2 Game 3 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes in their first-round playoff series, falling even deeper into that abyss, now in a 3-0 deficit. Game 4 tomorrow back here in New York. The Owls' backs firmly up against the wall. As for the Rangers, they're back at it at our nation in our nation's capital tonight, dropping a 7 p.m. puck with the Capitals for Game 3 of their first-round playoff bout in New York. New York up, I should say, currently 2-0 heading in. That's sports sponsored by Pete Morgan of Peerless Boilers. Go to PeerlessBoilers.com, PavilionTankless.com to find a dealer near you. They're the world's best boilers. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Oi! This is Sid and Friends in the Morning. Friends, how many of us have them? Friends. 77 WABC.
You know, part of the problem is, to be very frank, a lot of America's leaders are not speaking out about this. You know, key political figures, certainly some elected officials in the state of New York and the city of New York, they're not calling this for what it is. It's absolute madness and mayhem, and chaos is not an American value. We met with Jewish students. We had a Passover meal with them before we went to that that event yesterday. And these kids are so heroic, but they're all banded together and they're fearful to go to class. I mean, they're in fear of their physical safety. And so the administrators at Columbia, rather than handling this situation, they just decided a few days ago, as you know, to just cancel classes. Well, we'll just do that. Then they came up with a hybrid model. And the message to Jewish students is, you know, maybe you should stay home. Everybody else can come and do their thing. I mean, it's crazy. We cannot allow this to happen. And we need more people to speak out. While we were there, 2 hours before we began our press event yesterday, Hamas issued an endorsement statement of the protesters. Yep. Hamas, yep. The vicious terrorist organization. That tells you everything you need to know.
That is the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, on this show yesterday. That's right, folks. We get the big ones. Mike Johnson on this show, and he said it. Hamas issued a congratulations to these protesters. That's all you need to know. So this is a warning to good friends of mine, dear friends of mine. One's coming in less than an hour. Judge Napolitano and Frank Morano, maybe Audie Idala, too. Talk on your shows about how you would sit there with these kids and the First Amendment is beautiful and this is great. Don't do it here. Don't do it here. This is way too near and dear to me. Now I know people that were murdered have died. These kids sitting on the lawn are there for the murderers. So you're okay with that. You believe it's a great thing. That's fantastic. Don't do it here. Just stay away from it because at this point, much like I've taken most of the Democrats out of my life, if you don't hate everything, I hate to say it, Palestinian, all of it, then I don't want you in my life either. That's how I feel. It may be immature. It may be stupid. Say what you want. That's how I feel. So thank you to Mike Johnson. You know, one quick thing before I get to Lawler. I posted a video on my Instagram and Facebook last night, Instagram at Rosenberg.Sydney. It's public again, at Rosenberg.Sydney and Sid Rosenberg Facebook. And it was when I went to the Nova Music Festival in Israel. And I was standing, you were there, Justin, you took the video, by this stick of a young girl, gorgeous girl, gorgeous, her 8x10. That's what that field has been reduced to now. Sticks with 8x10 photos, yardside candles, slippers, bongs, all the things these kids were wearing when they were having fun, kids dancing and listening to music. They were all tortured and raped and murdered, and that's why these kids are sitting on the lawn at Columbia. So congratulations when you defend those folks. So I posted the video to remind these protesters, your brothers and sisters, this is what they did at Nova. Well, you may not know this, but they brought all that stuff from the Nova Music Festival that went from Gaza to Tel Aviv. Now it's in New York, and I walk past it every day. On the way to the ferry, my walk on Wall Street, right across the street from Donald Trump's 40 Wall Street building, right across the street by the Citibank and Letitia James office, is the Nova Music Festival Exposition. Right there on Wall Street.
Yeah, I got to go see that this weekend.
You got to go.
Yeah.
Natalie Sanandaji, who's been in these studios with me a couple of times, beautiful 27-year-old girl that survived that day because, as she said, she had the choice to run right or run left. If she would have run right, she would have been raped and murdered. She ran left. Thank God she survived.
Well, how long until one of these idiots tries to go and, like, you know, vandalize?
No, they've got a tremendous amount of security.
Okay,
you look outside, you would think that Trump was showing up.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, oh, maybe Trump, but it's the Nova Music Festival.
Yeah.
Right across the street from 40 Wall Street. Folks, go check that out. Now, Congressman Mike Lawler showed up with me and Anthony D'Esposito, Bruce Blakeman, and Michael Rappaport at Columbia University on Monday. He went back again with D'Esposito, Speaker Mike Johnson, and Nicole Malliotakis on Wednesday. And he is a great, strong voice for the Jewish people in Israel. Here he is, my friend Mike Lawler. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Sid. How are you?
I'm good. Busy week for both of us. You especially, not once but twice at Columbia. And your speech Monday struck a chord with me, maybe more than any other, because you talked about not one but two bills you've introduced to try to help with some of this madness. So you've had a very busy week, Michael.
No question about it. And by the way, I'm going to be going to the Nova exhibition on Monday morning to visit.
Oh, good.
So I look forward to being there. And, you know, obviously, it's certainly going to be solemn. But, you know, this is a most precarious time in the world. And we are seeing what is happening in the Middle East. We are seeing what's happening on college campuses here in America. I'm proud of the work that I've done to pass legislation, critical legislation, including getting the SHIP Act signed into law last week.
You know, I got to stop you for one second. Do you know that on this show a couple days ago, Nicole was on right before she met you and the speaker at Columbia? And unprovoked, she was giving you tons of credit for the SHIP Act.
No, I appreciate that. And, you know, I did actually hear it because I listened to you every day. So I heard it live, and I appreciate Nicole's comments, and she's been a co-sponsor of that bill from the beginning and strongly supported getting it through. And that was critical to go after the illicit oil trade between Iran and China. Since Joe Biden took office, $88 billion in increased oil sales for Iran. That is what is funding Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and the terrorist attacks in the region. And that's why it was so critical to get this passed and signed into law, which President Biden did the other day, but to target this illicit oil trade. China is the biggest purchaser of Iranian oil, 80% of it. So that is something that we focused on. Secondarily and importantly, I have introduced two bills to target what is happening on these college campuses. The Stop Anti-Semitism on College Campuses Act, which would defund any institution of higher learning, including of student aid, if they sanction and promote anti-Semitic events like we're seeing on Columbia University. it needs to stop. And oftentimes the fastest way to do it is to use the power of the purse. And you see how quickly these folks change their behavior. The second bill, which is going to be marked up or voted on this week, we're going to bring it to the Rules Committee, is the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which would require the Department of Education to adopt the IRA working definition of anti-Semitism and all of its contemporary examples, and use that as the basis for enforcement of discrimination cases and violations of federal law. And that is going to be critical because, you know, when we met with President Shafik the other day with Speaker Johnson, it was clear that she is incapable of dealing with this challenge. She said that she tried to bring the police in, and, oh, that didn't work. It backfired.
Well, let me stop you for a second. Is she incapable, or does she really not want to do it? Because if you look at her and her family history, it would seem to me she'd be on the side of Ilhan Omar before Sid Rosenberg. So is she incapable or very happy seeing what's going on?
I would say it's a little bit of both. Not that she's happy about what's happening, but I think she, what she said to us, which I just found startling, was that when they called the cops on Monday, she got a lot of grief for it, and it was a very difficult decision because it, in her mind, it escalated the situation. And these students came back, and now they're trying to negotiate with them. And Anthony and I both looked at it. We're like, what are you trying to negotiate? There's nothing to negotiate.
Not only that, but I thought in this country we don't negotiate with terrorists. And while, again, I keep calling them out, people like Judge Napolitano, who's about to join me live in studio, and others are going on and on how they would sit there with these students, and it's the First Amendment, and it's beautiful. Wait a second. They're terrorists. That's what they are.
Look, this is not a First Amendment issue, Sid. These children, and that's what they are, they're children. They don't know the first flying thing that they're talking about here. And they are using the guise of free speech to intimidate, to harass, to bully, to physically harm Jewish students all across America.
And you're talking about the students, and what people have to understand, including the judge and everybody else, is there is a very high percentage of these people that are not just disenfranchised loser kids looking for a cause, which we've seen all the way back to Vietnam. These are paid people. I mean, finally, the New York Post has a story today about George Soros. So they are not just Soros, these Muslim brotherhoods. They are paying people who not only don't go to these schools, don't even live in this country, to go there and start trouble. They don't care if they get into a fight or get arrested.
There's no question there's paid agitators on these campuses. And that's why my position's been clear, and I said it to President Shafik. Those that are here on a visa that are engaged in this should be deported immediately. Those that are engaged in this anti-Semitism need to be expelled. And those that are causing physical harm or making violent threats need to be arrested, period. End of story. And the fact that Columbia University has allowed this to happen and allowed these kids and these paid protesters to take control of the school, shutting down classes, remote learning, hybrid. It is absurd. It is completely absurd. It's totally illogical. And if we don't crack down on this, both at a federal level and on these institutions, then you are going to see the continuation of this in perpetuity. I said it repeatedly. This is what happens when the participation trophy generation takes hold. These kids have never been told no. They've never been pushed back on. And the time is here. The real world is not an easy place to live in. And these kids seem to think that it's okay, that they can say whatever they want, that there's no consequences for any of it. You see Ilhan Omar's daughter. Oh, I got suspended, and then I lost my housing and food, and now I'm basically homeless. Well, there's consequences, and you should have thought about that.
Well, and it also pertains to our local leaders, our mayor, who tweets and says things every now and then, but still hasn't shown up at the university, our governor. Let me play for you, Mike Lawler, something I played earlier about an hour ago. the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis. Now, I thought he was a lousy presidential candidate. He was. And I want Trump to win. But he's a great governor. And he's going to tell you, Mike, and the listening audience, how he handles these types of things in Florida compared to these feckless, no-good scumbags in New York.
You think about what happened when you have these Hamas demonstrators out. They're taking over bridges and they're taking over roads. And first of all, you don't have a right to do that. You have someone get stuck in traffic. How do you know if someone may need to get to a hospital? Someone may need to pick up a child somewhere, and you're just going to commandeer the road because you have this ideological prediction. They tried to do that in Miami. And what happened? In 10 minutes, they got dragged off the road where they belonged. And we're not going to tolerate that. You look at these universities. When we have students who are doing things that, I mean, look, some of the stuff with the Hamas, I think is absurd that someone would go out and demonstrate on that. But, you know, when you're chasing Jewish students around, when you're not letting a Jewish professor enter a building, when you're targeting people like that, that's not free speech. I mean, that's harassment. That violates appropriate conduct. And yet at Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost. They do whatever they want. And these administrators and the presidents of these universities are weak. They're scared and they don't do anything. You know, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled.
Love it. You're going to be expelled. Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida. So here we are, Mike Lawler. Commencement is about to begin soon. Commencement looming at Columbia University. And not only is there still an issue, but these tents, this encampment is still up.
She told us how she had a midnight deadline to take them down. The kids blew past it. And then she said, but you know what? We went and negotiated with them, and they took down 20 tents. 20 tents they took down. And we said, okay. And then she goes, oh, and they're self-checking the people to make sure that they're students at Columbia. I mean, this is the type of nonsense that you're getting in New York. And you see what happened in Texas. You see what Governor DeSantis just said. We have to crack down on this, and there can be zero tolerance. You know, if this was any other group, and I said this directly to President Shafiq, you know, if this was a protest against black students, if this was a protest against gay students, if this was a protest against immigrants, you know, you would crack down on it immediately. And she just looked dumbfounded. The reality is that this has been allowed to happen because anti-Semitism is, at its core, has been tolerated for decades, especially in academia. It needs to stop. That's why we need to pass these bills in Congress and crack down on it. And Governor DeSantis is right. The state governments have a responsibility to step in and to ensure the safety and well-being of these students, because clearly these college administrators are failing in their obligation.
Well, I'm so damn proud of you, Lawler. I can't even begin to tell you. I mean it. You've done a great job this week. You're a tremendous congressman. Folks, please go to Lawler for New York, Lawler for New York, and make sure my friend Mike wins again. He has, he's tremendous. You're doing a great job with this. Both of your bills, the SHIP Act. Congratulations on all of it. And you keep talking, Mike Lawler. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sid. And just to be clear, it's lawlerforcongress.com.
Oh, Lawler for Congress. Right. And that's the number.
Lawler for New York may come. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Is that the number four or F-O-R?
F-O-R.
F-O-R. All right. Lawler for Congress. Thank you, Mike. Great job. Mike Lawler, who is a terrific guy, very smart, very, very smart, and I'll say this every time, gives the best tour of the People's House, the Capitol building, anywhere in the country. All right, wraps up hour number one. Big hour number two, two in-studio guests coming your way in the great one, Curtis Sliwa and Judge Andrew Napolitano, plus more on the Jets, Giants, Knicks, and Rangers. And what is Sid Rosenberg going to do tonight in the city? All that and more. Back with hour number two, if you know him, with the news. Yeah.
Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Always a disco Friday for my man Curtis Sliwa. The Brothers Johnson stomp on your sunny Friday morning, 7:20 here in New York City. Curtis, you know the deal, folks. Big ratings, Rip and Reed, noon to one. Can't miss that show every weekday afternoon. Hosts overnights on the weekends, and really does a great job with me. He's on every day. He's the icon. He's the legend, Mr. Guardian Angel, Curtis Sliwa. And I'm looking forward to what Curtis is about to do, because all he has said to me is, based upon what I talked about in hour number one, my trip home and the walk down Wall Street, one side of the street is 40 Wall Street, Donald Trump's building. Right across the street is the new Espo for the Nova Music Festival. Curtis said, I'm going to take you home today. So with that said, Curtis, you take it home.
Yes, because I listen to everything you say, Sid. Other guests come on and they just spiel whatever they want to say.
Well, not Mike Lawler. Lawler just said he listens every day. He knows exactly what's going on.
Understood. But most don't. You be honest. You know, they just come on, they talk about, I listen to you all the time.
100% liars.
So I listen from the moment I get in, and I take meticulous notes. So let's follow you home today.
It's going to be fun.
You're on the train. You're heading down to Wall Street. You're going to see Tish James's office, right?
Well, I walk past it there, right, on Wall Street.
Yeah. Right, the state attorney general. Once again, I gave homework to Noam Layden, who has not done it. But on Monday, this past Monday, Michael Henry, who ran against her, she would not debate Michael Henry, the Republican. She was afraid of him. Tweeted out, hey, you know, Tish James teaches at the School of Public Affairs at Columbia University on policing.
You know, she doesn't.
Yes.
On policing?
Once a week.
Now, on Columbia, policing. I knew she was teaching something at Columbia on,
yes,
policing?
On policing.
Really?
Yeah, so why hasn't she been questioned on this? This is Monday, Michael Henry. By the way, I'm encouraging him to run again and to beat her. He almost beat her. Remember how close he came?
He did a good job. He didn't almost beat her, but he did a good job. He'll actually be there, I think, tonight at the Republican Metro Club dinner where they're honoring Tom Holman, Greg Kelly, Gordon Chang, and Alina Haba. He's a very good candidate.
Okay, so that's
I like
one.
Him either way.
All right, so that's number one. That's Monday. Nobody picked up on it, right? I tell Noam Layden, find out yesterday on the Rip and Read. I ask him this morning. Oh, well, I'll get to it this morning. Yeah, same thing, remember, with Gerald Nadler, graduate of Columbia, congressman of that district who hasn't been there. It's okay. Noam better deliver by 12. Now you mentioned the Nova Music Festival,
right,
and the exhibition. Lawler said he's going. I know you're going. I said, hold on. Lower Manhattan, right? 50 of those who attended Nova have since committed suicide.
Well, you're talking about, no, these are two different Novas. The Nova in Manhattan, you're talking about the actual, yes, Nova Music Festival in Israel.
Yes.
And I was at that one, too. Right, I've been, right, at both now. I've been, right, to the one in Israel and New York.
50 of the survivors,
yes,
since then have committed suicide.
That's true. Natalie Sanandaji has been on this show twice.
Right.
Beautiful 27-year-old girl in studio who survived that day, and she knows one or two of the people that have actually killed themselves since.
Right. Why isn't the media giving that attention? You have. I give you credit again. You're on it, Sid, ahead of the curve. You talked about the rapes October 8th night when you came back on that Monday. First one. I give you credit. Where's the rest of the media? If anybody in the world committed 50 suicides, there'd be massive coverage. Now, 50 again. 50 women, Lower Manhattan, get punched in the face. What does Eric Adams say about it? It's a perception of crime. So now you're on the ferry. You get to your house.
This is great.
And what did you say? You were going to put one hand down your sweatpants while watching the Rangers game.
Well, I've got that choice. I could do that or go to this big Met Club dinner tonight.
Right. But you see, there's a reason that you have not gotten prostate cancer. I did stage 4 cancer, and unfortunately, our colleague Bernard McGurk died from prostate cancer because the study came out. Men who masturbate once or twice a day never get prostate cancer.
Then I'm never going to die.
Right. Your kid porno, you've said, hey, I watch porno, and people say, oh, that's disgusting.
No, it's not.
No, because it enables you to avoid getting prostate cancer. Is that not a published study in the New England Journal of Medicine?
Well, it's it really serves two purposes. A, like you talked about, now I'm not going to get prostate cancer. And it also, believe it or not, helps you control ejaculation. So really, when you watch that type of stuff, it's more of a medicinal, kind of like smoking weed.
Yeah, yeah.
People smoke weed now for medicinal purposes. You could use porn for the same
now,
thing.
See, I almost died from it, stage 4 prostate cancer.
Right.
Poor Bernie died from it.
Yeah.
Who knew you were ahead of the curve on this, too?
Well, my whole show now, this is great news for all of us. Lewis, Justin, Noam, we're never going to die, any of us.
That's right. Then you mentioned that the Sullivan brothers, first in war, first in peace, are going to be honored, the alumni of LaSalle Military Academy out in Oakdale, which closed about 2,000, the Christian Brothers. Will the La Cosa Nostra wing be there? All the mob guys who sent their sons out there, will they be there too?
Well,
some of them are my enemies.
Because the last time that Tom Sullivan had something in our neighborhood at Jameson's, which, by the way, Eric McManus sold last week, I showed up early. You showed up later. But the kid who was like one of the leaders
Gambino.
Of the alumni.
A Gambino.
No, yeah, well, Jimmy Conway, otherwise known as Jimmy Burke, Robert De Niro's part in the movie Goodfellas. His son is actually one of those guys. But on a serious note, that was a great school. Those guys did great. And one of
Wait. But you mentioned Jimmy Burke.
Yeah.
You mentioned yesterday Jimmy Breslin. Who walked into a restaurant in Queens, saw Jimmy Breslin there, almost beat him to death. Jimmy Breslin goes to report it to the police, and the police said, hey, we don't know what you're talking about, Jimmy Breslin. He did it to Jimmy Breslin. He almost killed the
Jimmy
guy.
Jimmy Burke did that.
Yes.
I know that. Tonight, though, at this big dinner for the Sullivans, honoring them, I should say, for their State LaSalle Military Academy, they're going to honor one of my dear friends and yours, because now you've met him.
Yes.
And that would be the great member of the E Street Band and Silvio Dante from The Sopranos, one Stephen Van Zandt. Congratulations, little Stevie.
Well, I hope they'll be serving Italian food because,
yeah,
you know, corned beef and cabbage ain't going to do it. Sorry, Irish guys. No Irish fear. Your food sucks. It better be Italian food. But anyway, let's continue to move on. You're in a rage, right? Columbia University, 1968. History repeats itself. 56 years ago, Mark Rudd and the White Students for a Democratic Society and the blacks from Harlem take over Columbia University for 7 days. 7 days. They take over 5 buildings. Mark Rudd actually said, I get into the president's office who fled. I pick up the phone, no cell phone. Say, I call my mom and dad. I said, mom and dad, we've taken over the president's office. And they scream at me, give it back. Give it back. They're going to expel you. They're going to kick you off the campus. No, we're not moving. The cops come in. They had been waiting 7 days in the police wagons. This was the tactical patrol force, hats and bats. They're gnawing on their nightsticks because the Lindsay won't let them do anything. And then they get the order, clear out the campus. The black kids understand. The cops are going to give you a wooden shampoo. Thank you. We're heading back to Harlem. Not a black kid got injured. The white kids, pigs. We're going to fight. So 700 of those white kids got arrested. The cops gave them wooden shampoos, had them sucking concrete, right? That's how they cleared off the campus. You think Eric Adams, swagger man with no plan, who won't even go to Columbia University, oh, I'm too busy going to Cindy Adams' birthday party. You think he's going to give that order?
Well, here's the thing. They're blaming everybody else but themselves. So they're blaming Shafiq, who's the president. They're blaming the cops They're blaming the cops, that they're the aggressors, that these lovely children are out there with their roses and flowers for a very, very good cause. And they're blaming also outside protesters.
And George Soros. We always blame
right,
George Soros.
But
everything.
We know that already.
I know,
it's
but come
news.
On. Enough of this. But your rage is about Jews fighting back, right?
I am. Yes, I'm angry.
1968, again, history repeats itself. An organization was started to defend Jews, the JDL, Jewish Defense League. Listen to its leader, Maya Kahani, defending the rights of Jews to carry guns, every Jew a 22.
What we're trying to do is call upon every Jew to have a gun, a legal gun, every Jew a 22.
Maya Kahani, 1968, that's when the Jewish Defense League started. Is that, that's like smelling salts to
you. Porn. It's porn. My prostate's doing great.
That's better than Prozac, right? Yeah. That's better than Levitra. Cialis.
Play it again. Please play it
please,
again.
One more time.
Please, one
what
more
we're
time.
Trying to do is call upon every Jew to have a gun, a legal gun. Every Jew at 22.
I was talking to a kid I know. His name is Mitch Camarda. I made a movie last August. And a very good movie. And it was Armand DeSante, Peter Gordio, Craig DeFranche, a bunch of others. And it was directed by this kid, Mitch Camarda, who goes to Columbia. He's a Jewish kid. He goes to Columbia. And him and I talk frequently now because, you know, he's freaked out. So he saw I was on the 6 o'clock news on Monday. He sees I've been taking a very angry stance. And we've been talking for days about all this. And I said, Mitch, you guys got to fight back. He said, listen, we're starting to do that. They had a rally last night. They did.
I saw it in the rally. It wasn't
much.
Students.
Right.
It wasn't.
And it wasn't even much anyway.
Right.
And then, you know, they're talking about putting flags on the lawn. They didn't put flags on the lawn. They put the flags outside. The lawn is still owned by these pro-Palestinian scumbags.
Hey, Columbia, turn the sprinklers on like Harvard did, right?
Yeah, Rappaport did that video.
Turn the sprinklers on.
I mean, I don't want to hear it. I told the judge, Napolitano, who I love him, and he's a great guest, and he's a dear, dear friend. He'll come in and talk about Trump. Do not talk about the First Amendment, how these kids have the right to do this. I want to beat these kids with bats.
All right, put on your JDL shirt. We got to get you a JDL shirt every
Jew
at 22. And then,
let's go!
Your friend,
let's kick some freaking ass!
Your friend will come on, and I got a lot of heat for this. I'm going to play his cut, Arthur Idala. What he must do is give a bris to what he is comparing Harvey Weinstein to. Listen to the cut.
I would prefer to argue Harvey's case only because I tried the case, and you can say whatever you want about him personally, or even you could say that he's guilty of everything. I'm not saying that, but like, he did not get a fair trial, like in any way, shape, or form. The same way Trump didn't get a fair trial in front of Judge Kaplan.
Please tell your friend Arthur Idala, Donald Trump is in court 8th day today. Do not mention Trump in the same statements as Harvey Weinstein.
Not fair, right?
It's not helping Trump.
Right.
It really is. There's no comparison. That guy is a sexual creep, an assaulter, a harasser. And then he's representing Ghislaine Maxwell, the procurer, the pimp for Jeffrey Epstein. Please, would you ask him to truncate that? I passed the construction workers this morning at the Chase Building on Park Avenue. They said, oh, you missed it. Donald was here yesterday.
We didn't miss it.
Two of the guys said to me, please, tell Arthur Idala, I listen to Sid every morning, don't compare that to Trump.
Well, I mean, he was just talking from a legal.
I know, but still, it's not good.
Harvey Weinstein, to me, is a creep, a scumbag, a lowlife. He can't do enough time in prison. Now, again, from a legal aspect, Artie did a good job exposing what the other side did.
But is he going to be up outside of Albany at the Mohawk Correctional Institute delivering milk duds to his favorite client, Harvey Weinstein, who got busted for having milk duds in his cell in City Protective Custody
in
L.A. County Jail.
He had milk duds. Well, here's the good news for you.
Yes.
You don't have to ask me that question.
Yes.
Because Arthur, as we speak, is on his way to do Rosanna Scotto's show on Channel 5, and then he's going to make the walk over from Rosanna to me. So he'll be on this show, but better live in studio.
You better not pass those construction workers because you're going to say it. Do not mention Donald Trump when you talk about Harvey Weinstein, the perv.
There were two construction workers, now that you pointed that out, that the New York Post interviewed that said they voted for Biden. There may be more than two overall, but these two specific guys said they voted for Biden, and now he wouldn't vote for Biden in a million years. Trump is getting their vote. Are you ready yet to make the public announcement that for all the Trump hating you've done over the years, that you're going to vote for Donald Trump?
Well, if the election were tomorrow, obviously I'm voting for Donald Trump.
Yeah,
right?
Baby!
What do you think, I'm going to vote for Biden? You think I'm going to vote for Frank Morano's candidate,
oh,
RFK Jr.? Although he needs Secret Service. I mean, I think we can all agree on
RFK
that.
Jr.?
Yeah.
I need Secret Service.
I know that, but look, he's a Kennedy. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, remember, 1968, his father got killed. Again, 1968. By who? Sirhan, the Palestinian. That was the anti-war years. Nobody could figure out back then. Why is a Palestinian killing a presidential candidate in that ballroom through the kitchen in Los Angeles? By the way, Rosie Greer tackled him, Rafer Johnson, and Jimmy Breslin tackled Sirhan, who said he killed RFK because of the Palestinian cause. We've gone full circle. 56 years, and I'm tired of these politicians, all of them, and your friend Artie Idella giving us a circle jerk.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Listen, actually, it's like a party here every Friday morning. The public should know that.
We do have a good time on Fridays. You're right. I love that. To see this growing backlash at these anti-Israel protests. You know, while Ilhan Omar, who's just the lowest form of humanity, you keep applauding these kids, you First Amendment folks out there, you holier-than-thou Constitution idiots. Ilhan Omar shows up, you know it's a bad thing, and her stupid daughter. Ilhan Omar was on the Columbia campus yesterday with the protesters. Like they're at a giant Redskin game. You know what's funny for you folks out there that are behind all these peaceful kids? You know what happened yesterday, if they're still alive? Some Israeli girl got raped by about 20 guys in Gaza. While everybody's having a good time protecting the Constitution on the Upper West Side of New York City. Some young Israeli girl my daughter's age got raped about 20 times. Shut up! Don't give me this nonsense. Save it for your law classes. Ain't gonna work here. I was in Israel. I was there. I was at the Nova Music Festival. I was at the kibbutzim. This is not a cause. It's not. This is not a good thing for our country. A bunch of stupid kids and hired thugs out there in the name of murder and rape. There's nothing good about it. Nothing. If it means we need to amend the First Amendment, figure it out. but it can't stay like this. It can't. It's not good. Not good. If you feel differently, save it for your own show. Save it for your own podcast. Save it for your law class. I don't want to hear it. Zaka still has not put all the bodies back together yet in Israel. Still. They're still finding dead people. Still. 8 months later. No one's talking about the hostages today. Nobody. Nobody. Well, I am. I remember I had a big fight with my wife a couple of months ago, and I got crazy. I yelled back. I was loud and scary. And I remember saying to her, she said, you know, your reaction was a bit much. And I said, well, that may be true, but why do we always talk about my reaction? I've had that argument with Danielle 100 times. I said, you know, if you didn't start the fight in the first place, there wouldn't be a reaction. How many times have you heard, well, you got to calm down. Wait a second. I didn't start this. So, yeah, maybe I was a bit loud today. Maybe I'm just pissed. Maybe because the last 2 or 3 times I kept my mouth shut. I don't hear about my reaction. Don't start. Same thing with Phoebe. All I hear about is his reaction. He didn't start it. He didn't go into Palestine, which doesn't exist, and start having his Israeli soldiers rape and murder Palestinian kids. He didn't do that. I don't hear about his reaction. I don't hear about my reaction. Don't start. 90% of Palestinians, this is a fact, not up for debate, 90% of Palestinians vote with Hamas. Celebrate with Hamas. Dance in the streets with Hamas. They're not innocent people. They're taught at the age of 7 to kill Jews. This is not a good, peaceful, cause-worthy protest. This is about hate and murder. And enough is enough.
77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends.
Touch 753. So my friend Donald Trump back in court again today, the day after that great rally, literally 2 blocks away, hundreds of construction workers and union heads. Trump talking about New York being in play. He's certainly treating it that way, but now rallies in Harlem and here in Midtown Manhattan. But he's back in court today for the 8th day, this ridiculous, sham, horrible trial, persecuting my friend. He's going to win the presidency anyway. You know, they just shut down 3rd Avenue here right behind us, Judge.
Why?
Because the imbecile in charge right now, the asshole Joe Biden, slept in the city last night. He had a big event with Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones in Westchester. So he's going to be getting up soon at his hotel and leaving.
Will he shut it all down? Will he know that he's here?
He doesn't even know. So here he is, that voice you know with that lamp, of course. You can't even make it up. God, I love that. Is my dear friend, Judge Andrew Napolitano. Let's get right to day 7.
Okay.
I've got a cousin down in Florida. His name is Michael Robbins. My favorite, very, very close. My favorite cousin, my father's side. And he knows David Pecker. David Pecker related to his ex-wife, who actually died, a young lady, Lori. I loved her. God rest her soul. And he sent me a text years and years ago when Pecker was running the National Enquirer. His text read, I swear to God, his name may be Pecker, but he's more of a pussy.
Oh, God. You really want to go there at 8 in the morning?
So Pecker's in court yesterday talking about Tiger Woods and Arnold. And what was that all about?
It was an effort to demonstrate the practice in the tabloid industry of buying negative stories by paying the person who has the negative information, leading that person to believe that the story is going to be published and this will be the exclusive, and then killing the story. Why was the jury told about this? This was an effort to lay the foundation to show that that's what Trump attempted to do in the Stormy Daniels case. Except in these cases that David Pecker told about, Pecker paid for the stories. When Stormy Daniels came along, Pecker calculates how much money Trump owes him. Now, you know, this is a tendency of the former president always to pay 100 cents on the dollar. We all know that. And Trump says, I'm not going to pay. Pecker says, I'm not a bank. I'm not going to do this on my own. He says to Michael Cohen, you do it. That's the origin of this. Now, there's some trouble with this, and it has to do with, I know you don't want to put the two of them together because there's no comparison between them, but it has to do with the reversal of the conviction of Harvey Weinstein. In a couple of minutes, you're going to have Artie Adala here, a great criminal defense lawyer, maybe one of the best in New York City, who tried the Weinstein case, who argued the appeal, who succeeded in getting reversal. The reversal was based on allowing the jury to hear prior bad acts of the defendant. Justice Mearsheim is allowing the jury to hear prior bad acts of the defendant.
He's allowed to do that?
He has the discretion, but if he abuses that discretion and the defendant is convicted, it'll end up in a reversal. That's what happened in the Weinstein case. The judge allowed too many prior bad acts in. So Artie's victory in the Weinstein case came at the right time for Donald Trump. It's a lesson for Justice Mearsheim. Don't let too many prior bad acts in or you'll get reversed.
Well, I have to tell you, you
Does
are one of the
make
great...
Does this make sense to you?
No, it makes a whole bunch of sense. Okay. And I have to tell you, thank you so much, because I had no idea what all this meant. And you just did a tremendous job of explaining it. My thought is that unlike you, because you are a tremendous man of the law, you really are, this guy, Justice Mearsheim, he doesn't seem to care. Like, I know he's had some impressive years on the bench. I've heard people say, outside of this Trump thing, he's actually not a bad guy or a bad judge. He's acting like
Artie,
a complete
ask
idiot.
Ask Artie, ask Joe Tacopino. They'll tell you he's a respected judge. You know how you can tell when a person is a respected judge? When both the prosecutors and defense lawyers like him. They know he's fair.
Yeah, but I'm sure that if I asked the same two guys you just mentioned, both dear friends of mine, both poly prep guys, about Justice Engoron or Justice Kaplan, they would have said the same thing.
Probably.
But Trump derangement syndrome has turned otherwise impressive men into idiots.
We'll find out very soon, because Justice Mearsheim has to rule on the contempt. And that ruling could come as soon as today.
You mean the gag order?
Yes. They had that hearing on Tuesday. He hasn't ruled yet. He's probably going to rule today. Usually those things come out on a Friday.
Let's say he rules against Trump. What's the penalty?
Theoretically, it's $1,000 per act of contempt. The state says there's 14 of them. What's a $14,000 fine to Trump? It's nothing. It could be incarceration. I think you should know that the Secret Service and the NYPD and the Department of Corrections are prepared for the unthinkable, that Donald Trump would be incarcerated. I don't think that's going to happen, but there'll be a threat of it.
Oh, my God. Let's take a short break, because not only did Trump have this long day in court yesterday, but there was another huge day in court that, of course, was all about Donald Trump, miles and miles away, that may set precedent for the rest of the presidents forever. We'll get to the Supreme Court with Judge Napolitano right after this.
You're out of touch. I'm out of time.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
All right, a few more minutes here with the great Judge Napolitano before he goes across the street for his TV gig. Judge, the Supreme Court, all nine of them heard oral arguments yesterday in the immunity case for President Trump. And as expected, people like Jackson were like, well, nobody's above the law. Others said, yeah, but, you know, he was the president. Let's do something. So it's what I took from it. I'm not as smart as you, was that there'll be no absolute immunity, but it does seem like he may get a 5-4 vote in favor of some limited immunity. What did you see yesterday?
I think you have an excellent grasp on what went on. Now, I listened to all 3 hours and 20 minutes of the oral
argument.
You did,
right?
Yeah, it took a lot of patience to listen to it, particularly some of it, but I won't mention names. Some of them are my friends, you know. Here's what I think it will come down to. I think the court will send it back to the trial judge and say there's no such thing as total absolute immunity. There's immunity for official presidential acts in furtherance of the Constitution. There is no immunity for personal acts in furtherance of self. Who decides whether they're official or personal? A jury. That means there will be a jury trial. If I'm right, that means there will be a jury trial and the judge will instruct the jury. If you find that the things he was accused of were official government acts, you must find him not guilty. If you find the things he is accused of were personal acts, then you have to find, did he have intent to break the law and did he break the law?
Well, if he doesn't win this immunity case, then it's business as usual.
Correct.
For Jack Smith.
Correct. But Jack Smith is going to get on a treadmill and try and get this done before November.
But if, in fact, the ruling is in favor of Trump, even if it's limited and not absolute, what does that mean for Trump in this case?
It means that the jury trial will proceed and he and his lawyers will attempt to persuade the jury, not the judge, the jury, that what he did was within the scope of his office. And if the jury agrees with that, the case goes away. They find him not guilty.
Well, doesn't the Supreme Court, if they rule that he does have some immunity, wouldn't that be a huge win for Trump? Or?
It would be a partial win for Trump. Jack Smith, whatever you think of him, anticipated this. And much of the allegations against Trump allege personal behavior outside the scope of the presidency. If the jury believes that whatever he did on January 6th and the weeks and months leading up to it was personal behavior outside the scope of the presidency, they can find him guilty. If the jury believes it was official acts of the president, they will find that he is immune from prosecution.
All right, one more, and I don't want your opinion, please, because I love you, and I'm afraid if you give me your opinion, I'm going to get angry.
What the hell are you going to ask?
I'm going to ask you about the First Amendment and what's going on at Columbia and over 250 schools now around the country. You know how I feel.
I'm not know exactly keep, how you feel.
You know, so you give me the legally what you if you think what these people are doing falls under First Amendment freedom and if it's okay.
The First Amendment has to have breathing room, and people cannot be punished because of their exercise of the freedom of speech. The First Amendment is not the right to attack somebody, and it's not the right to threaten somebody, but it's the right to say whatever you want.
Including death to America.
Yes,
death
horrible
to the
as
Jews.
That is, as condemning and repulsive as that is, yes, I disagree with what you say. I disagree with everything you say, but will defend to the death your right to say it.
Your right to say it.
Yes.
Do you think is there an opportunity, is there a chance, based upon this ugliness, where I think most of the country agrees with me, Constitution aside, this is a very, very bad thing, is there a chance that something could be amended, something can change? Because I know the strict constitutionalists, maybe like you and Dershowitz, love it. I don't. There's a lot about the Constitution that, guess what, 250 years later, doesn't make sense. Is there a way we can change some of this?
There is a way, but I can't imagine the First Amendment being changed. It's the sheet anchor of the... If there were the First Amendment, we'd be talking with a British accent.
Listen,
I get it. And we'd be worshiping Charles III.
Listen, who takes more advantage of the First Amendment than me? Who else goes on the air and calls people assholes and pussies?
You have become a wealthy and powerful person because of the First Amendment.
Right, I get it, but I also understand that there's a line, and what these people are doing at these universities, that is not freedom of speech, that's hate.
But the winds of political change cannot affect the freedom of speech, because if they can, those winds could blow a different way, and that'll curtail your speech and mine.
I tell you what, if they said today, they would kick every protester out of every university, but it means you get fired, Sid. I'll take the firing. That's how, honestly, that's how brokenhearted and angry I am at this country and these kids and these mayors and governors and school chancellors. I'll take the termination.
You couldn't judge these kids fairly. You think they're monsters.
Monsters, because ignorance is no defense. At the very least, they're stupid. That's no defense. But the truth is, a lot of them are monsters.
But the whole purpose of the First Amendment is to keep the government out of the business of speech, out of evaluating it, out of interfering with it.
This is different.
The duty of Columbia University to protect their students and make sure they're safe. Make sure they are physically safe and make sure their expressive liberties are expressed in a safe manner.
But they're not doing that. You've got a woman there who's on the bad side. Shapik is on the bad side.
It's private property, so there's not much the government can do.
Oh, boy.
Still love me?
Of course I love you. No, and I have to say this, on a serious note, your Trump stuff today was the best I've heard. Because I watch Fox and all these other stations, and a lot of times, I'm not that smart, I walk away confused. You fixed it today, so thank you.
Thank you, my man. Give Idella my best. Tell him I love him.
Have a great weekend, and good luck across the street.
Thank you.
And for folks who want to listen to your podcast, which gets like a billion listeners every week.
Judging Freedom on YouTube.
Judging Freedom on YouTube. That's Judge Napolitano. We'll take a short break. We will talk to Arthur Idella, and who else is coming up this hour? Andrew Giuliani. Oh, two big ones. Keep it right here, right after Nome with the news.
In the morning. Feel the daybreak on my face. There's a blood that's flowing through the feeling. With a knife to open up the sky's veins. Some things will never change. They stand there looking backward, trapped unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged. In the backwater swirling, there's something that'll never change. And when I should have been done a long time, it laughs and says I find ways. Just when we're sheltered under paper, the rockets come at us sideways. Something will never change. They stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from pain. They may seem rearranged. In the backwater swirling, there is something that will never change.
Is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
For my friends.
77 WABC.
I really feel like right now, Chuck Schumer is basically public enemy number one, and he's Jewish.
Well, it's shameful. I mean, he can handle these issues one by one, and he should. I've called upon him to do it, and all of us should. I mean, we need every elected official, every leader in this country, every conscientious citizen, to show solidarity with our Jewish students and with the Jewish people and with Israel. Israel is fighting for its very existence right now. This is not some political game. And these kids out there that are chanting, some of them chanting death to America, is not something that should be allowed. They've co-opted the First Amendment, and they're using those arguments to protect calls for genocide. and to elevate the voices of anti-Semites. This is the stuff of the 1930s. I mean, it has to be stamped out. Sid, we found out yesterday one of the estimates is you've got issues like this and protests like this on maybe as many as 200 college and university campuses right now. Wow. Somebody's got to speak out, and members of Congress and leaders in Congress have an obligation to do that, and that's why we came to New York yesterday.
Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who joined me live on this show yesterday. This show is, it's so big. I mean, think about the guests that we get on a regular basis, including today. It's been great. Mike Lawler, Curtis Sliwa. Moments ago, we spoke to Judge Andrew Napolitano. The story that everybody's covering today, Harvey Weinstein's rape reversal overturned in New York. His famed defense attorney, Arthur Idala, walking over here. He'll be live in studio. Gordon Chang, who is the voice when it comes to China slash Russia versus America. He'll be here. My friend Eileen Jimenez, big-time life coach. She'll be in studio later. But right now, the man, of course, his father does a great job on this station, 3 p.m. every weekday afternoon, but so does he with his own show and his own podcast, my dear buddy, Andrew Giuliani. Andrew, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Sid, good morning, my friend. You know, I got to tell you, you and I are lifelong giant nuts. And, you know my sexual orientation. I swing straight, and that's just the way I've always been. I've been turned. But there's one day a year where fat men turn me on, and that's day one of the NFL draft. I guess 3 days a year. It's during the NFL draft. We didn't get a fat man yesterday, so I was a little disappointed. Although when Bill Belichick told me that Neighbors was top-notch, as he told the world last night, I said, you know what? Okay, I can deal with it. Let's see if we can get a couple fat men tonight.
Yeah. I mean, look, I would, unfortunately, I've lost a lot of the luster for Belichick because the truth is, once Tom Brady left New England, they were 9 games under 500, and his coaching stays before Tom Brady, including Cleveland, were not very good either. And now he's not even working outside of doing stuff for ESPN. So believe it or not, I've lost a bit. I'm no longer putting Belichick there with Lombardi and Shula and Paul Brown. He's probably closer to 4 or 5 than number one. But to your point, what last night said to me was all the talk about the Giants trading up and getting Drake May, the quarterback out of North Carolina, blah, blah, blah. When you go out and draft a big-time wide receiver, the second-best wide receiver in the draft behind Marvin Harrison Jr., what that says to me is the future of the Giants at quarterback is still Daniel Jones.
Well, I'm biased with Belichick. I love Belichick. I think he's number one. I also go back also to the two Super Bowl championships that he won as a defensive coordinator. So to have 8 rings, I think, is pretty incredible. And you're right.
By the way, he had Tom Brady play quarterback in New England, and the two he won with the Giants on defense, he had 56, Lawrence Taylor. So it's not like he won with decent players. He had the best at their positions ever.
But he did have the insight to draft Tom Brady, to develop Tom Brady when every other team had passed on Tom Brady 4 times over. And so for me, I always look at Belichick and say, hey, look, he was able to do that. I have to give him credit where credit deserves.
No, listen, I love him. I'm just saying, I'm not putting him there with Vince Lombardi. He's closer to 4 or 5. For me, 4 or 5 than number 1, but I love him. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I got him as number one, but that's we'll agree to disagree on that one, and I understand the point that you're trying to make. And also, I'm a little biased. I've gotten to know him a little bit over the years. He's a massive, massive conservative. He believes in this country. And so because of that—
Wait a second. Hold on a second. He turned his back on Donald Trump. What are you talking about?
What do you mean? I've missed that one. If that's the case,
yeah. Trump wanted to give him a medal, and he said no, thank you, not from him.
Well, they ended up rekindling very, very closely after in 2021. I just saw him at the golf course probably a couple of months ago or
good.
In January or something like that.
Okay, good.
So I think that actually, to be perfectly honest, you want to get into the inside of some of this. I think that was at the urging of the Kraft family, as a matter of fact, and the National Football League in general, more than even Coach Belichick.
Okay.
Because he was, I remember some of those conversations. He was extremely apologetic to the president. There was a kind of more of a conversation between the two of them than there was a declining, if you will.
Okay.
But that relationship has since repaired very, very strongly.
Okay, good. Because I love Bill. Again, came up, like you said, those great years with Parcells, with the Giants, and certainly you can't argue his success with New England. Then he's won all those rings. But I do want to stick with Trump here. I mean, you were there since day one. There you were, looking so handsome in your suit and tie, standing outside the courtroom, literally day one, last Monday. Yesterday was a big day. Pecker back on the stand. And then, of course, the immunity hearing of the Supreme Court looks like it'll be limited, not absolute immunity, but at least limited. What are your thoughts on the day that was yesterday? And by the way, it started yesterday with Donald Trump literally two blocks away from me at 6:30 in the morning, with hundreds of construction workers and union members showing once again why he really is the blue-collar president, why he really is the president of the people, why people like you and I love him so much. Just a packed day for Donald Trump.
Oh, 100%. I think it shows Donald Trump is ubiquitous, right? You can't get away from Donald Trump. He is the story driver, and he's going to continue to be driving these stories over the next 6.5 months. Most good, some will be bad in there. But the truth is, when I look at all of this, I just go back. I guess you just got to break all this down, right? First and foremost, started off in the morning and look at the union workers that he was with right there. And you could see just how much he single-handedly really changed politics in this country. Those were consistent Democratic voters for decades and decades and decades. You could even say a century. And now they are consistent Trump supporters, because he was one of the first people, going back to before he was president, talking about how those jobs, how those industries have been hollowed out here, or were being hollowed out here in the 90s and 2000s. He was talking about at the time, and how they could actually work to bring it back. And he did that with different plants. You could look at all the plants in South Carolina that they were able to establish when he was in there, all the different initiatives that they tried in the state of Ohio while he was president in order to get some of this work back here in the country, get some of the manufacturing back. And Lord knows, Sid, that's one of the big things that's going to happen if he ends up becoming 47th president of the United States. Look at the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, that's something that needs to be developed here in the United States of America. We don't want 80%+ of our drugs being actually produced outside the country, and maybe in other countries that have nefarious ideas, let's say, like China. So that's certainly a big one. And then going to the court cases here, I think I think his defense attorney did an amazing job of just laying out how this was really a standard practice for the National Enquirer. They would buy stories consistently, had nothing to do whether or not this person was running for president or not, had everything to do whether that they could sell magazines or not sell magazines.
I mean, exactly. The two people they brought up are not exactly, well, one was a politician, but an actor first, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the other, Tiger Woods.
Yeah, exactly. It was all about whether or not they could sell magazines. It was all about what the celebrity status was of these people. I mean, anytime you go in the supermarket, right, you're seeing people that are like, I don't know, David Beckham and whoever else that's on the cover. Maybe Rosenberg on the cover right there. Hopefully Sid never lands on the cover of that one, but maybe Sid Rosenberg.
Teresa Ruelas, you know, somebody from the Real Housewives or something.
Yes, exactly. So this had nothing to do with the fact that he was running for president of the United States. It had everything to do with the fact that he was a major and is still a major celebrity. And that's exactly kind of the crux
of this argument. And I think where the DA's case really, really falls flat after you go and look and say, well, the statute of limitations expired. And even if the statute of limitations hadn't expired, this would be an underlying misdemeanor with what they're trying to actually establish. So when you break all of that down and then you get to that part right there, you can again see just how shaky a ground this case is really built on.
It is shaky. I want to move to the Columbia stuff with you because I like to point out my friends that are not Jewish, that I consider more Jewish than some of my own relatives. One of those guys is Long Island Congressman Anthony D'Esposito. He is such a huge, strong voice for being pro-Israel and the Jewish people. Mike Lawler, the same. And so are you, Andrew. I know that, of course, when you were with Donald Trump, you were part of the U.S. Holocaust Board. You've got a meeting coming up next week. You've always been very, very pro-Israel. Your dad, too. There's a lovely picture of your father and BP Netanyahu right by the Joe DiMaggio picture inside your dad's condominium. I noticed that right away. And, you know, I was out there this week, Monday, at Columbia. You know how I feel. I spend every day talking about this. What are your thoughts on what we've seen over the last couple of weeks here in New York and now across the country?
Well, it was interesting. As we were leading into the segment here, I listened to, again, to the part that you had talking about with Speaker Johnson about Chuck Schumer. And it got me back to thinking, this specifically with Schumer, so going back 10 years ago now, of just how really undermining of Israel he has been in this process. And I go back to the JCPOA with Iran. Chuck Schumer had the opportunity to whip Senate votes against this terrible Obama deal that ended up flushing Iran with cash. Chuck Schumer took the coward's way out. And what he did was he let senators basically vote any way that they wanted. He said, hey, you do what you need to do. Don't worry, you're not going to have any kind of reprisal for me over here. And then after the vote was sealed, he went to the New York Times and wrote an op-ed in the New York Times talking about why the deal was bad. He didn't actually use any of his legislative power to do anything about it, but he actually wanted to make sure he could have his cake and eat it too. And sadly, that's what you get in Chuck Schumer. You get somebody who really does not care about Israel, I should say, does not care about Israel anywhere near as much as amassing political power. That's kind of what he cares about more than anything. But obviously, look, I stand very strongly by the fact that Israel has not just a right, but a duty to its citizens to wipe Hamas off the face of the earth. It is that simple. And until Hamas actually believes that Israel has a right to exist, the Jews have a right to exist, then what is even the discussion about here? They have a right and a duty to protect their citizens. And by not doing that, they actually would be derelict of their duty.
All that is true. But then when you talk about rights and legal issues, these students, according to Judge Napolitano and others, and they're right, I know they're right, they've got the right to sit outside of a university or inside a university as long as they're peaceful and do what they're doing. I mean, me personally, and I don't encourage violence. Let me preface it by saying I don't encourage violence. But I've had fantasies about bashing every one of these kids over the head with a bat. I really have. I mean, I don't care if they're stupid, if they really are hateful, if they're paid, if they're unpaid. Every one of them is a scumbag. That's my opinion.
That's true, but I'll say this, right? And going back to looking at a lot of the people that are on these campuses, we've seen now a lot of them are paid protesters, and George Soros is one of the people that is underwriting these paid protesting here. I think it's called the Joint Students Against Students Support Palestine or something like that. I forget exactly what the name of the organization is, but a lot of those people that are on that campuses are not necessarily Columbia students. They don't have the right to be on that private property, on that campus, and doing that. Now, Judge Napolitano would certainly know more about the legal letter of the law than I do on this stuff. But if you break the rules, then there are consequences, Sid. And that's, I think, the thing that we've forgotten about in all of this stuff. If you break the rules, if you sow chaos, if you interrupt students from actually going to class and trying to get an education, as anti-Semitic an education it might be these days at Columbia, then there are consequences for those actions. And if we just live in a society and a city where there are no consequences for your actions, then guess what? Our quality of life is going to continue to go down the toilet in this city. Crime is going to continue to grow up. Businesses are going to continue to go elsewhere. And the whole system is going to collapse. And that's sadly what we are seeing over the last 10 years in New York City and what we've been seeing over the last few years, but specifically ramped up since October 7th on these college campuses.
In the final 10 seconds, Andrew Giuliani, another excellent, excellent appearance, talking about a whole bunch of different topics and doing a great job of it. In the final 10 seconds, I want you to give me the call. Jones, first touchdown pass to Neighbors.
Oh, you want me to give you the call?
Let's hear it.
Oh,
I love it. Place the ball at the 30-yard line, second and six. Ball at the opposing 30-yard line. Jones back to pass. Okay. Andrew, take it away.
Okay. Daniel Jones drops back to pass. He fumbles because they have a terrible offensive line. Thankfully, Malik Neighbors is there. He picks up the ball. He runs the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown, New York football Giants. Hey, Sid, I got one more question for you.
That's hilarious. Yeah, go ahead.
One more question. If you and me and Bill Belichick end up having a lunch, can we get him back to number one? What do you think? Can we get him back to number one in the Sid rankings?
Does he pay?
Okay, I'll let him know that that's in there.
No, by the way, when Andrew Giuliani says, me, you, and Belichick go for lunch, the last time he said that was with Trump, and guess what? We had lunch. So if Giuliani says that, odds are it's going to happen. Look, again, he's somewhere in the top five. He could be one. He could be four, depending upon what restaurant he takes us to. But either way, one more. What do you think about the Falcons? They just gave Kirk Cousins $180 million 2 weeks ago, and they draft a quarterback. What is that?
Another guy who's played a decent amount of golf with President Trump, Kirk Cousins. Fascinating. Right? Kind of bizarre that they would do that and to draft a quarterback that seemed like a reach like that, that they may have gotten in the second round. They could have traded back. They could have done some other stuff and gotten more value and then picked up the guy. It was kind of bizarre on that end right there. Really, really
it was. It
was
weird. You give a guy $180 million 2 weeks ago, and then you draft Penix out of Washington. Yeah. Andrew, excellent job, buddy. I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sid. Let's go Rangers tonight, baby. Got to clean up the Capitals. Let's go.
Big game three to Andrew's point. The Rangers took the first two at Madison Square Garden. The series, to Andrew's point, does shift to Washington tonight for a game three. Rangers looking to go up 3-0, which would be the complete opposite of the Islanders, who lost in Elmont last night to Carolina, and they are now down 3-0. Andrew, great job. Take a short break. Audie Idala live in studio. Coming up. On this occasion, it's not true. Look at me. I'm not you. I would like a place I could come up on. Have a conversation on the telephone. Wake up every day that would be a star.
Is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
City.
great Barry Manilow. It's a miracle at 8:43 on your Friday morning. I guess some would say it's a miracle that the Harvey Weinstein rape verdict was overturned. It's a miracle. But not really, not when you've got a defense attorney like Arthur Idala, the very well-dressed Arthur Idala. So we're going to take a short break. Artie just did a big TV hit with Rosanna Scotto on Good Day New York, and come back and talk to the man that everybody's talking about today. How did he, in fact, win this, where the rape conviction in New York, Harvey Weinstein, overturned? We're going to find out momentarily. Artie Idala live in studio.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Boy, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Well, you know, when you hear the Rolling Stones, that means that Artie Idala, the great defense attorney, Arthur Idala, is about to come on. He's sitting here jamming.
That's a great tune, man.
Looks so good. Artie had a huge day yesterday. He was on the very end of my program, the very end. He had just found out that there was a reversal, overturned the Harvey Weinstein.
And you were the first call.
I was the first call. It has been overturned here in New York. I guess if you hate Harvey, the good news is Los Angeles is still not good for Harvey. 16 years not good. But here in New York, it was overturned. And I have to give my dear friend of a lot of decades, right there with Joseph Tacopina, a tremendous amount of credit for being a great attorney and getting this done. Now, that didn't stop folks like an MEC this morning. Some lady was on, 5:30 in the morning, and she's like, there is Weinstein's attorney. He's celebrating. What is he celebrating? The guy's a rapist. It's like, hey, dummy. He's not celebrating that a quote-unquote potential rapist is on the streets. What he's celebrating is the legal system in this case seemed to work.
Yeah, and the thing is it's being so bastardized, the legal system. And first and foremost, what they're doing to Trump, in other words, my opinion regarding Donald Trump, not from a political point of view, from a legal point of view, is they found a target. And then they're trying to, they struggled very hard to find a crime. And that is a bastardization of the legal system. With Harvey Weinstein, it's a little different. Harvey became his own target, but there was so much pressure to convict him. The judge basically threw the rule book out the window. Said it was a case from 1901 that everyone in New York has always followed. And he was like, no, we don't need to follow it here. And this court, they pulled it off.
Was it down to women that the other side used as witnesses that were not even part of the case?
That was it. They initially said they wanted to use three women, and then in the middle of the trial, they snuck in a fourth. So just do the math. He's charged with sexually assaulting three women, and the judge lets in four other women who had never gone to the police, never made a police report, never went to the DA's office, never went to a hospital and said, I was abused. It's basically rumors. You know, I was on with Rudy Giuliani yesterday, and he goes, we can't live in a nation where people are convicted on rumors. And it's, speaking of women, Sid, and this makes me happy, and it makes all of us happy. Harvey Weinstein's reversal was spearheaded by all women. The first woman was Judge Janet DeFiore. She was the chief judge. She gave us access to go to the court, and then she retired. Then the woman who wrote the brief from my law firm, Diana Fabi Sampson. Then the judge who writes the opinion, Judge Jenny Rivera, another huge champion of women and women's rights. And of the four judges who ruled for us, three of them are women. So it's all women saying this is just not right.
That's nice. You know, the Harvey Weinstein trial speared the beginning of the Me Too movement. And that's fine. You know, listen, I'm obviously, it doesn't make me a courageous or brave guy on the side of women who have been sexually assaulted, if they have been, or raped. But what's kind of scary is that all these women, thousands of them, ran to the rescue and just blasted Harvey Weinstein, which is fine. Yet, none of those same women that were eager to blast Harvey Weinstein have said a word about Hamas.
Oh, you know it. You know Dershowitz is all about this. He's got a line, me too, except in Israel or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it's me too, except if you're a Jew.
Except if you're a Jew. It rhymes.
Right. I think that's what he said. And listen, just in terms of the Me Too movement, right? So we're trying the case, and in the front row is Doug Wigdor, who represents all these women, and Gloria Allred. I know you have lunch with her on a regular basis, Gloria Allred.
Oh, please.
And they're there for the whole trial. And when the main witness is testifying, the woman who's at the center of this reversal, and she's asked, is Gloria Allred your lawyer? Yeah. Are you suing Harvey Weinstein? Do you want money from him? Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, why is Gloria Allred here? Oh, she's just here to help me through the system. Guess what? Right after the conviction, guess what happened?
What?
A lawsuit.
Yeah.
She gets hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So if they bring this case back, like your other good buddy, I know you have lunch with Alvin Bragg a lot.
Yeah.
If he brings this case back and she comes in, I mean, one of the first questions is, you remember testifying here 4 years ago with Gloria Allred here? And you said this was not about money. Look at the ladies and gentlemen of the jury and tell them how much money you've gotten since then.
That's fair. The governor of California is also very upset with you. Turns out, I guess, one of his lovers was...
Gavin?
Gavin Newsom.
Gavin.
He's upset with you. But I want to talk about, before we take our first break, we're going to keep you here for two segments. When you walk in...
Wow, it's big. You know you've hit, you know.
That's right. That's
well,
right.
McGurk was here. You know, he used to keep me for two segments. And you're like, no, Idala's only a one-segment guy. I got demoted. Yeah, Bernie always had me two segments.
It's so funny how many people give Bernie credit for stuff. He didn't want any of you here in the first place.
No,
I used to have to, Lou, how much would I have to browbeat Bernie? He didn't want guests. He did want guests.
Well, I know that
he
I
wanted
agree.
To just
you know
play
what?
Clips
you know, I
and
love
play
Bernie.
Clips.
Bernie
he loved you. We loved you, but he didn't want you here.
He would save me. He would save me when I was on for Imus.
That's true.
He would save me when I was on for
Bernie Imus. Was great with that, but he didn't want guests. Him and Matt Meany. We don't need guests. Oh, shut up.
Of course, the guest is on my segment. Of course.
Right. That's Sid's segment. He gets the guests on his segment. Let me play my clips. So you walk in, you get accosted by Curtis.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You got accosted by Curtis because you made a comparison yesterday between Trump and Weinstein, okay, in the trials. Now, I defended you with Curtis this morning. I said, well, legally, he can do that. It makes sense. But forget about what I say. How much do you respect Judge Napolitano?
Oh, forget about it. I'm all kidding aside. I stop and listen to him anytime I hear him.
Okay. Well, here's what Judge Napolitano had to say. Literally an hour ago about you.
Now, there's some trouble with this, and it has to do with, I know you don't want to put the two of them together because there's no comparison between them, but it has to do with the reversal of the conviction of Harvey Weinstein. In a couple of minutes, you're going to have Artie Idala here, a great criminal defense lawyer, maybe one of the best in New York City, who tried the Weinstein case, who argued the appeal, who succeeded in getting the reversal. The reversal was based on allowing the jury to hear prior bad acts of the defendant. Justice Mearsheim is allowing the jury to hear prior bad acts of the defendant.
He's allowed to do that?
He has the discretion, but if he abuses that discretion and the defendant is convicted, it'll end up in a reversal. That's what happened in the Weinstein case. The judge allowed too many prior bad acts in. So Artie's victory in the Weinstein case came at the right time for Donald Trump. It's a lesson for Justice Mearsheim. Don't let too many prior bad acts in or you'll get reversed.
Hold your thought, Arthur Idala. That was Judge Napolitano saying, Arthur's right. There are some similarities between Weinstein and Trump. And in the end, what helped out Artie may in fact help out Trump. We'll get Arthur's opinion when we come right back.
77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends.
Let's do this. Let's do this, bitches. Back with Arthur Idala. So last week broke, I played the Napolitano cut where A, he called you a great defense attorney, one of the best in New York. That's not good enough. You and Tacopina are the two best. Whatever order you want, I don't care. And then he said, hey, listen.
When Joe is in New York. I texted him the other day. He texted me, he's in London and he's still in Italy. Is. God bless him.
He still is. He's taking his grandson Theo to the zoo today. You do realize right now this is his slot you're on.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, he's on 845 every Friday.
I know he's on. I just didn't. I don't keep track. I know when Judge Knapp is on, and I know when O'Reilly's on.
Right. Well, this is Tacopina's slot. Oh, let me add Tom Kniff, another great attorney, to that mix.
Love Tom.
He just texted. I didn't look at his text yet. But the judge said that you got to be careful when you start to allow prior things in these people's lives because, hey, like in your case, you add one too many, comes back to bite you in the ass, and maybe Mershon is doing that with Trump.
And prosecutors should know better. In other words, in the Harvey Weinstein case was reversed for the fault of two people. Yes, the trial judge for allowing it, but the very intelligent and experienced prosecutor, Jonah Luzzi, who has been great, and I have not a bad word to say about her, but she should have known. She was smarter than the judge was. She should have known not to ask for so much stuff that it was going to get reversed. In terms of, you know, comparing it to Trump, to Harvey, look, I will let your astute listeners decide whether they're going to take Curtis Sliwa's opinion on the law or Judge Andrew Napolitano's opinion on the law. I'm going to take the high road and leave it at that.
Tom Kniff texted me this. I read the 77-page Court of Appeals. Kniff, by the way, is Daniel Penny's attorney, the hero Marine who's been also taken to the woodshed by this scumbag DA Alvin Bragg in the death of George Mealy.
Tell us how you really feel.
Not how I feel. I read the 77-page Court of Appeals decision last night after I turned off the Islanders game in disgust. The highlight, he says, was footnote number 9 when the court talked about how false rape allegations have historically been weaponized against black men in the country and allowing the sort of character assassination Weinstein was subject to at the trial would open the door to it being used against every defendant, whether guilty or actually innocent.
Well, that shows you what a great lawyer Tom Kniff is because he pulled out a huge part and people were kind of making fun of me maybe on MSNBC because I said today is a great day for America. And like, why is Harvey Weinstein this bad guy? You know, why is this a great thing for America? Because, Sid, it just shows that the laws matter. Our system of justice matters. It's not that we pick a target, whether it be a Hollywood producer or the former president or maybe the future president of the United States. The laws matter. We can't throw the rule book out the window just because we want to get someone so badly.
But that's what we're doing right now every day in Lower Manhattan. Well, this is day number 8 for Donald Trump. They've thrown the rule book out.
But as Judge Napolitano said, this fires a shot over the bow of Judge Mershon, saying, listen, we're here, and we don't care who the defendant is. We don't care how unpopular it is. Listen, one of these judges who ruled in our favor, they're the most liberal judges on the court. You think they went home that night, last night, and their family was happy with what they did? Absolutely not. They deserve all the credit in the world that they did the right thing. Because that's what the law said, not what their families wanted, not what was popular. That's why it's a great decision. Judges doing the right thing despite popular opinion.
I want to talk about the Supreme Court. Most of my friends grew up and idolized Daryl Strawberry or Lawrence Taylor. I'm serious, or Derek Jeter. You idolized Anthony Scalia. And now you've got a great relationship for many, many years with Judge Alito. And yesterday, all 9 of them listened to oral arguments in terms of the president's immunity. And as Alito pointed out, this is a big deal because regardless of what they come up with in June, this will be the case forever. This will set precedent. What do you think about yesterday's day in the Supreme Court?
It was interesting. I actually caught it from my dad, you know, because he listened to the whole thing. You know, you have some great lawyering going on there. You know, what Jackson said, the newest judge, she's like, well, if we say they have total immunity, they could do whatever they want. And how is there any checks and balances? And then Alito countered saying, well, if we tell them they could be prosecuted, it may handcuff a president from doing the right thing, thinking he could be getting himself in trouble. So but the best part of it is that this decision is not going to come out until the end of June. Well, that's when they always do. And any judge who says, okay, Donald Trump, we're going to start trial in July during the Republican convention, I mean, that's just wrong. It really becomes election interference.
You say it's just wrong, but not allowing him to go to his high school, his son's high school graduation is also wrong.
Well, that's wrong for Barron in person. I'm talking what's wrong for the country. I'm talking about what's wrong for the world. This is the president of the United States, is the leader of the free world. A guy who, look, whether you love Donald Trump or you hate him, you got to love this country. And this country is founded on the citizens making decisions. Not Jack Smith, not the Attorney General of the United States. The United States citizens are supposed to vote for whoever it is. And Donald Trump, whether you like it or not, has won the Republican primary. He's the guy. Biden's on the other hand. And both of them should have the equal opportunity to campaign, to raise money, to be out there, to debate. And then we go to the voting booth, and when we decide who's president. Not because he's caught up one of the two candidates who one party decides he's the enemy. We're going to keep him locked in a courtroom through the whole campaign season and prevent him from being president. I will tell you, though, Sid, it may totally backfire because there may be people who say, you know what, I was undecided, but I don't like the way they're treating this guy, Trump, and he's going to get my vote.
Wow, I hope you're right. Well, listen, congratulations to you. You're a very, very hard worker. Oftentimes, I get a text from you 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, 19 books in front of you getting ready for a case, and the one you just pulled off wasn't easy. You had to be a great attorney to do it.
You talk about me and Kniff and Tacopina. It's not exactly what we do. So it's like you going, you know, when you do your movies, you're out of your comfort zone.
Right.
I'm in front of that court of appeals. There's 7 judges. They're all coming after me nonstop. I argued for 40 minutes. You know, I'm allowed to say I'm a little proud of myself. You know, when you're a defense attorney, you don't get a lot of victories. So when you do get a huge one, you savor it a little bit.
No, congratulations. I feel that way. So does Tacopina in London. Your mom and dad.
He was one of the first people to text me was Joe.
And what about my wife, Danielle?
And she did as well. And yes, my mother and father who are listening right now are extremely, I hope so. And I'll leave you this in my PolyPrep yearbook. The last thing, when you write in the yearbook, all your stuff, and there's your little picture, the last words I said, Mom and Dad, I'll make you proud. And yesterday I said to my mom, I said, Ma, are you proud? Of course I'm proud. Are you kidding me? So that's what warms my heart. And my little son, who carries my name, Arthur Idala, you know, whenever in the world of Google, it matters when you put in someone's name. So for him, this will be a case that's cited in the courts for decades. And I hope I made little Arthur proud, who told me this morning, Dad, congratulations. I heard you got 100 on your test. That's what he said. Congratulations. I heard you got 100 on your test.
How old is he now?
That's 7. So cute. God bless him.
You got a doubleheader tomorrow.
Good for you.
I'm very happy. Thanks for having me here, Sid. I love you, brother.
My kids Google me. This is a mugshot, I swear to God.
No, stop. Congratulations. You're number one, man. You're number one.
I'm very proud of you. I'm happy for you. You did a terrific job, and enjoy it. Really enjoy it. And there'll be another big win right down the road because you are that good. I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
That's the great defense attorney, Arthur Idala. You may not like his client. That's fine. That's okay. You don't have to like Harvey Weinstein. I don't like Harvey Weinstein, not even a little. But Artie had a job to do, and he did it like no one else can. Congratulations, Arthur Idala. 4th and final hour coming back right into this.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Friends, how many of us have them? Friends.
77 WABC.
So I've been telling you guys all week that later on tonight is the annual Metropolitan Club Gala. And I'm friendly with Chris Lenzo. I love her. And Ian, love him too. I spoke at that club, did a book signing at that club on the Upper East Side. And last year, they gave me the very prestigious Warren Brandeis Award, which you get for integrity in journalism, which I never thought I'd win, but that's fine. I was honored. Tonight, that same award goes to my colleague here, Greg Kelly. But then I looked at all the award winners for this big dinner tonight, which I may or may not go to now. Now I've got some traveling issues. So, Krisha, Ian, I know Knipp is listening. It's 50-50. But either way, I'll be there in spirit. But all the winners tonight include Tom Holman, Greg Kelly just mentioned him, Alina Haba, and you ready for this? Gordon Chang. And you know how much I love Gordon Chang. Folks, if there's an issue around the world, I don't care if it's China, Russia, Korea, the Philippines, I go to Gordon. And I saw Gordon. He came to our WABC big deal back in September with his lovely wife, Lydia. But tonight, Gordon got a party in New York City. So here he is, the very deserved recipient of a new award from the Met Club, my friend Gordon Chang. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Sid, and thank you so much. And I have to say that I was floored when Ian told me that they were going to award me, because I was just, this hasn't happened before. So thank you very much for mentioning it.
No, it hasn't happened before. I mean, you are the preeminent voice. I'm not saying that to blow smoke up your ass, Gordon. You know I really, really mean that. You're the best. I'm surprised you don't have a whole room of awards back home.
Well, talking to you is an award in itself, so thank you very much,
thank
Sid.
Thank you, Gordon. Well, let's get right to China before we get to the Blinken visit today, yesterday with Ping, and what they talked about, including drugs. Been quiet lately. You know, we kind of shifted away, at least I did on my show. Don't talk much Russia, Ukraine anymore, because I'm Jewish. I went to Jerusalem, and I am enveloped in Israel, and now what's happened in Israel coming to our college campuses. So China seemingly quiet, but not really, because behind the scenes, Gordon, they're still working very, very hard, yes?
Oh, definitely, yes. And one of the reasons why we have all of these protests on college campuses in support of the Palestinians is because of China. If you look at TikTok, of the videos that they have on Hamas, 96.5% of them support the terrorist group. So if you want to know why our college students are saying, gas the Jews and behead the babies, well, you have to look to Beijing, because they are fomenting this.
Wow. What do you think then about the bill that Mike Johnson and the Senate just passed? A lot of aid, obviously, over $90 billion to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. We'll get to them, where they're saying to China, if you don't sell TikTok, it'll be banned. Now people like, for example, Donald Trump and Curtis Lee will say, you can't ban it. That's not the American way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is not a First Amendment issue, because when people say, oh, this is not the American way, that's they're talking First Amendment. But, you know, this bill doesn't regulate content, which would be a First Amendment issue. It goes to China's conduct. For instance, they've violated every pledge that they have made about protecting U.S. data. They're stealing it. They're pipelining it to Beijing. And also, they're using that algorithm, the curation algorithm, the one that determines what your kids see and what they don't see. They're using that to propagate illegal drug use, suicide, self-harm, and the slaughter of Jews. So, no, I don't think that they should be allowed to run TikTok. And if I were president of the United States, I wouldn't wait for the 9 months. I would expropriate it, because China has used TikTok in the commission of a federal crime. Matter of fact, an act of war. And that gives the federal government the right to confiscate it without compensation under existing forfeiture statutes.
You know, Gordon Chang, you talked about how China is behind these TikTok videos and the Hamas propaganda. I'll take it a step further. See, when I asked you that question, I already knew the answer, but I wanted your response. China is responsible for the whole war. And why is that? Because Iran is the country that really has been funding all these proxies, from Hezbollah in Lebanon to the Houthis to obviously Hamas. And how did Iran get rich again after Trump stepped on their necks? Oil. And who do they sell their oil to? 80% of it? China.
90% of it last year to China. The volume of China's purchases of Iranian oil last year were 60% above that in 2017. 2017's relevant, Sid, because that was the last year before the Trump administration reimposed sanctions on the purchase of Iranian oil. The Biden administration has, as a matter of policy, decided not to enforce those sanctions, which means Iran has the money to do this. And it's not only just the money, it is the propaganda support, it's the diplomatic support, and it's weapons. The Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah all have large quantities of Chinese weapons. So there would have been no October 7th were it not for Beijing. And by the way, there probably would not have been an attack on Ukraine were it not for China backing Russia. And we wouldn't have all the turmoil in North Africa if China and Russia weren't fueling it with all sorts of bad acts. So, yeah, China is waging war on the world, and it's doing it, and the United States is not opposing it to the extent we should.
Not opposing it, not talking about it. I mean, you just laid it out perfectly, Gordon Chang. The conflict in the Middle East, the conflict in Ukraine, the conflict in Africa, you know, Taiwan now, they had to get money in this latest bill because we're scared to death. China's going in there as well. I mean, they have literally waged world war over just about every continent. Why isn't anybody talking about China?
Yeah, it's three continents. It's Europe, it's Africa, and it's Asia. Middle East is Asia. Yeah, and Xi Jinping, he is revered as Mao Zedong, the founder of the People's Republic. Mao had the theory of called chaos. Chaos, if you have that, it will lead to worldwide Chinese rule. This is what, not domination, rule. And also, Mao talked about encircling the cities from the countryside. And I think that Xi Jinping believes that Ukraine, for instance, is part of the countryside, and we are the city. So really what we're talking about is Xi Jinping's war on the United States. The Biden administration won't acknowledge it. We're sending our Secretary of State to beg in Beijing. Begging is not a strategy. Americans don't beg. But unfortunately, Antony Blinken is begging.
Antony Blinken's an asshole, and he's a traitor, and I hate his guts. And I know that you're not used to that type of language on Fox News, but this is why, Gordon, you love this show the most. But
that's right.
I know you do. But I want to stick with the war stuff. You mentioned three continents. It is four because North America includes us. What's the war here? Fentanyl. I couldn't believe, Gordon. I was watching Maria Bartiromo on Sunday. She had some congressman on out of Michigan. And he was going on and on, and her, about how the Chinese are actually offering grants and huge tax benefits, grants to companies that make fentanyl, not companies making heart medication, not companies making allergy medication, companies that make fentanyl, which kills hundreds of thousands of Americans every year, get tax benefits and grants?
Yes, and they get grants, subsidies for exports as well. Look, Xi Jinping, when he was talking to Biden on November 15th of last year, he promised to reduce the flow of precursor chemicals and pill presses from China to the Western Hemisphere. That was essentially the same promise that the same Xi Jinping made to President Trump in 2018 and to President Obama in 2016. And we're not doing anything about it. Look, a lot of these fentanyl producers, they're gangs. Some of them actually are state-owned companies. Chinese diplomats provide cover to the gangs. Every container that leaves China is inspected by Chinese officials. The Chinese fentanyl gangs, they launder their proceeds through the Chinese state banking system. So, yes, two things. One of them is that Xi Jinping is murdering Americans. And the second thing is that Biden knows about this, has the power to stop it, but has chosen not to do so. Which means that Biden, it's acceptable that tens of thousands of Americans die from fentanyl each year that are murdered by China. For Biden, that's okay. If you want to be less charitable, you could say that he approves it. But in any event, Biden is morally responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of Americans each year.
That is a strong statement. Biden is responsible, morally responsible, from Gordon Chang, who may be the smartest guy I know. Final 60 seconds, Gordo. You know, we're not that far removed from a deadly virus that the Chinese, sorry, Andrew Cuomo, not the Europeans, that the Chinese unleashed on the world and killed a lot of folks. We can argue back and forth about how serious the virus was. I mean, I took the side of not as bad as the media made it, but certainly a lot of people died. And the question is, as we speak, are they making another one? What do you think? Is COVID-2 in the works?
Oh, absolutely. And they actually talk about it. They call them specific ethnic genetic attacks, which are attacks caused by pathogens that will target only certain ethnic groups. In other words, leave the Chinese immune, kill the rest of the world. You know, in China's tightly public square, the extermination of the American people is a permitted topic.
Unbelievable. Well, Gordon, these last 9 minutes, that's why you're winning this award tonight. That's why when anybody wants to talk about any one of these countries, me, Katz, Matidis, Fox News, anybody, they only call you because you're just on top of all of it. So thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you tonight. Congratulations on the award, and congratulations again on another great segment on my show. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you, Sid. I really appreciate it.
I know you do. Me too. Thank you, Gordon. Gordon Chang, ladies and gentlemen, does not get better than that. We'll take a short break. Still more to do, about 30 minutes, until Brian Kilmeade comes your way. And I think I get to go home for the weekend. More of Sid and Friends in the Morning on a Shabbat Friday. I'll be right back.
I know that you know you would never have betrayed me. I thought I'd die while all the reasons still evade me. But you're back. Now I can see you. Now I can feel you. Same old feeling, here comes the feeling, here comes the same old feeling.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their home. There's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, "Brandy, fetch another round." She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, "Brandy, you're a fine girl.
This is like such a good like beach song, like Friday afternoon. We're getting close, man. Next week will be more like summer, mid-70s on Sunday, temperatures in the 80s on Monday, then mid-70s the rest of the week. I got stopped about 10 times this week talking about my tan. Wait till you see me next week. I go up on that deck of mine for about 2 hours, take a walk to the beach. Spend an hour on the beach, and that's all I do. I am tanorexic. You know, like, what is it, anorexic? I'm tanorexic.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Can't help it. I've been tan forever. Like, my great fear is that if I ever get, something happens to me and I can't go outside. You know, on a serious note, though, on a much more serious note, that's one of the things that Hirsch Goldberg said in his video. He said, "I can't go outside. No sun, no food, no water, no sunlight." That poor kid is in an underground tunnel for 7 months. He hasn't seen the light of day. And you scumbags sitting on the lawn at Columbia and 250 schools around the country, you lowlives, you reprobates, you filthy, disgusting animals, are out there every day on the side of the people that blew off Hirsch Goldberg's arms, and it's keeping them in a tunnel. Don't tell me, no, Hamas is bad, Palestinians are good. If you say that, you're stupid. You're uninformed. You have not read your history. 90%+ of Palestinians vote for Hamas. Well, they can't help it. They're scared. Hamas is going to kill them. Shut up. If you're on the lawn right now, you're on the side of murder. That's it. Anyway, Eileen Jimenez, or Jimenez, I'm not sure, is a life coach. A lot of people angry these days. I guess like me, I guess I'm one of those people. Well, I am. You know, I'm a lot of fun doing a Ranger game, don't get me wrong, like tonight, and then I'll be lamping it up once I'm out of here, but I'm angry. I am. I don't like what's going on in my city, my state, my country. It's horrible. People are depressed. All kinds of issues. So we'll take a short break and come back and talk to Eileen.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Don't Stop Believing. We were just talking about, Noam, you were laughing because I was talking about how people are angry, and I'm one of those guys. One piece of news from the Donald Trump New York trial, Judge Mershon, that idiot, is changing next week's gag order hearing to Thursday at 9:30 a.m. So the gag order hearing, not today, instead will be Thursday at 9:30 for Trump, who's already in court for day 8. So don't stop believing, right? And I just talked about how lots of folks are angry, and I'm one of those folks. I'm not angry when I'm outside the office. I'm a fun-loving guy. I watch the Rangers tonight. I go out with my friends. I go for dinner. I'm always kind of the life of the party. But I'm angry when I'm talking about what's going on in this city, in this state, and in this country. And a lot of folks are. And people, you're going to find out, are just kind of wired that way. You know, I often tell people who are easily angered, carry resentment around me, just let it go, man. It's so much easier to be nice, but you're going to find out that's not really true, that we're really wired to be negative and not nice. So my friend Eileen Jimenez is in studio right now. She is a life coach. She deals with the body, the spirit, and the mind. She's got a great website, folks. Check it out today, Life Craft Mastery. That's Life Craft Mastery. And here's Eileen Jimenez. Eileen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Move a little closer to that mic. There you go. So you're welcome. So we were having an off-air conversation, and you said that people are wired to be negative, which makes sense because everybody seems so effing pissed off.
Absolutely. We don't realize that half our day is battling our inner critic. So what I help people do is try to subside that. It's normal for us. We're programmed, I mean, between the news, our parents, just going outside, especially living here in New York, you're wired to be negative and to be on guard. So I try to help people release that fear and just be at peace, because I can tell you from a person that worked in finance for years, money, relationships, none of that really brings you happiness unless you're really, truly happy within yourself.
That's true. Listen, I tried vodka. I tried drugs. I'm being serious.
No, I know.
I'm not proud of it. It's part of my history. I tried a lot of things to make me happy. And my wife and my children make me happy. My friends make me happy. My job makes me happy. I've got a great job and I love it. But you're right. If you wake up in the morning, if you can't look in that mirror and I say, I like him or I like her, then you're destined to have a lousy day.
Exactly. And of course, your family is going to bring you happiness and your job. But these, if we're going to be honest, these are things that can be fleeting. People pass away. You can lose a job. So you always, going back to what you were saying, you always have to be happy within yourself. And that's definitely hard, especially again, with the media, with social media, comparing yourself to others. It's very, very difficult. So it takes a lot of work.
Let me talk about you for a second. Yeah. So you were in finance. Correct. And just so folks know, you're friends with Keith Kantrowitz, a dear friend of mine, Anthony Carone, a dear friend of mine, all those guys, and Mark Oranger, all them, Kemper. So you were in finance, but you always had this, I don't want to say dream, maybe it was a dream, to do what you're doing right now. How cool is it to realize that and do what you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, so I've always been on the operational side of finance. I've worked at hedge funds. I've worked in investment banks. And the way this came about was a mentor of mine actually suggested being a life coach, because I was just always coaching these executives, these people who have a ton of money. You would think they would be super happy and, you know, they have the world at their disposal. Miserable.
They jump off the roof all the time. No, I'm serious.
I know.
Outside of maybe LGBTQ people, I think those guys kill themselves more. Plus, they're drunk all the time.
It's sad. It really is. And I worked in several different industries. I remember one time sitting with one of the CEOs and he was just so depressed. And I said, you need therapy. And he's like, I have you. Why do I need a therapist?
So you
know what? I feel like the universe led me here and I couldn't be happier. I'm helping people reach their goals and ultimately just be happier people. And that's a blessing.
Well, let's start with this, Eileen. Mindset shifts for empowerment. Tell me about that.
So it's funny. You said you hit the nail on the head. So innately, I have a feeling you do this. You said if you're not happy with the person in the mirror, you're not going to be happy outside, right?
Well, that's true.
In the world.
100%.
So one of the things I tell people is, affirm, look in the mirror every day and tell yourself, I love myself. I'm capable, because these things, like, again, that's a part of rewiring your brain. You telling yourself, you believing in yourself really does work wonders. So even if you don't believe it, it's going to be hard to do at first. Like, you looking at yourself, you're like, oh, this is so stupid, but you follow through with it. And I do this myself every morning.
No,
I play,
don't.
I promise.
So
I
you get up in the
you.
Morning and you
I play affirmations. Absolutely.
So you walk into the bathroom, you look in the mirror and you go, damn, I love myself.
Absolutely. I'm gorgeous. I'm hot.
Well, that's physically, that may be true, but I think we're talking about more of an emotional level.
No,
here,
all
right?
of it. Listen, you have to start with what resonates the most, right? So no, but I'm being silly and facetious, but I do play affirmations every morning. And so There's been studies that when you wake up in the morning, so I wake up early and I do not look at my phone for at least half hour. And I know that's easier said than done, but that's why I wake up earlier than what I typically have to. So I wake up, I play my affirmations. I go work out. That's another thing that really, that's why when I said holistic, it really is all connected, mind, body, and spirit. When you work out, you release endorphins.
Oh, there's no doubt. Listen, my recovery for me is that. I mean, I gave up the drinking and the drugs for working out, and I can tell you that I do a 3-day on, 1 day off. Sometimes 2 days on, 1 day off. But life gets in the way, right? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty disciplined when it comes to working out, but life gets in the way. I've got kids. I've got stuff to do. So if I don't work out for 2 days, I can live with it. But let me tell you, that second day, my mind starts playing tricks. If, God forbid, day three, I can't work out, or there's a possibility I can't work out, I go right into a depression. I swear.
I believe you.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts. But that's all part of what you're talking about.
Correct. And doing hard things builds confidence. So I tell people, you're not going to want to get up and work out. But you doing that, it's you part of retraining your brain. Like, I'm in control. I'm going to work out. I don't want to be here. And once you're done, as you know,
you feel great.
Correct.
Empowering yourself to take bold actions. That's never been a problem for me ever, especially when I talk, obviously. But tell me more about that.
So, again, it goes back to what I was saying. When you do things that scare you or that you don't want to do, you build that self-confidence. I'll give you a perfect example. Me being here, this is out of my comfort zone, but it's something that I had to do for myself, and it's going to build confidence. Now, the next time I'm invited anywhere, I'm going to have that inner being in me that's going to believe, yeah, I can do this.
Were you nervous? You were nervous.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
You don't sound nervous since you hopped on the air. You're taking over the damn show.
Be careful. I might take over. But no, yeah, you just have to do things that scare you. And I'm sure you've done this.
Of course. I mean, well, look at Justin. He looks in the mirror naked every day. That's got to be terrifying. you're right. So sometimes, not only sometimes, but oftentimes, yeah, go out of your comfort zone. That's how you build confidence. And finally, boosting confidence and charisma, which you're doing right now, in personal and professional settings.
Yeah. So what I've learned is that a lot of people don't connect with others. And one of the main ways to connect with others is just listening. It's so simple. But listen, people just want to feel heard. That's really what it is.
Well, what if they say, what if they're talking about stupid stuff? Like, what if it's a Democrat, for example? I can't just sit and listen. I want to kill somebody.
Well, no, but you, honestly, if you listen, they'll be more intrigued by you and they'll want to talk to you more. You don't have to always agree.
Yeah.
There's things that you're not going to agree with everyone on everything.
No.
But just providing them the respect. You love when people listen to you, right?
And I love it. Sure.
Exactly. We all do. So that makes people, that makes you more charismatic. People want to talk to you more.
You know, you have friends, for example, that have never, ever heard of me before. Not my name, not this show, anything. And they listen this morning for the first time in anticipation of your appearance.
Correct.
And now they're all in love with me. All of them, aren't they?
I mean, I did get a text saying, I love this guy. Who is he? So you're getting fans for sure.
Well, that's cool. That is cool. So the website, besides, there's some information on there, some nice pictures. And I think you can actually sign up for a session right there online, right?
Correct. I offer a free one-on-one just for compatibility purposes to see whether we're compatible and whether we can work together. Because, you know, I'm not here to waste anyone's time or money, quite frankly. And, yeah, they can reach out to me there and we can take it from there.
Lifecraft Misery.
Mastery, not misery.
See what I did there? You see that? You see what I did, Louis?
We're trying to avoid the misery.
That's that negative thing again. Damn it. You were great, and your job is important. I'm one of those guys. It's funny we played Don't Stop Believing because that was the last song ever played on The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought that was the night that Jimmy died, you know. Excuse me, Tony. His real name was Jimmy. But the beauty about that show, and I say this all the time, it was not a mob show. That was a periphery, right? You love the mob stuff. The show was the family unit, and how, in this day of negativity, a crime boss got his true solace and felt better, his serenity, I would say, sitting with a psychologist.
Exactly.
Those scenes with him and Bracco, that was The Sopranos. Not Paulie Walnuts, not Christopher, that was it. So even then, 20 years ago, they said, even crime bosses have to sit with a psychologist, psychotherapist, what it may be. And that's basically what you do now every day.
Well, yeah, we're all human at the end of the day. And no matter who you
not
are.
Not all of us. Yeah, not Chuck Schumer. What if, in fact, Joe Biden called to say with you? Would you say no? Please tell me you say no.
Listen, we're all human. I'm but not going to turn away anyone who
any
needs
human
help.
Who's got
I'm
money.
Sorry.
Thank you very much, Eileen. We're done for today, and we had a great week again. My cast was, as always, tremendous. Lou Ruffino, I guess I'll see you at some point this weekend, Lou. Maybe tomorrow? Harbor Lights?
It depends on how many affirmations I've done.
You don't do it. Do you do any affirmations?
Yes, I do affirmations that I'm going to be mad when I get in here.
Oh, no, call me.
I confirm that.
How many affirmations do you do? Give me a number.
I mean, 4 to 5.
4 to 5. Okay, Louis, start tomorrow.
Okay, 1. We'll start with 1.
Okay.
That's okay.
That's a good start. We'll see you at Harbor Lights. Hey, Justin, great job this week. Noam Layden, great job. Jim Flippin, all of my guests today. God willing, as my friend Gene says, we'll all be back Monday at 6 for a Monday morning show. Until then, from all of us on Sid and Friends in the Morning, to all of you, have a good weekend. Peace!